Yo, you have three. Holy crap.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, May 1st, 2025. This is your award-winning Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1760.
This is No Agenda.
Celebrating 6,397 days and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I'm sick and tired of hearing, I hope this message finds you well. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yeah, I'm convinced that that's just ChatGPT. If you get one of those and someone said, write a nice letter to my friend.
Yes.
And that's
I hope this
up.
Message finds you well. And then there's the alternate, which is, I hope this email finds you well. What does this even mean?
Has anyone
ever said this in real life?
I hope
this message finds you well. What is it, looking for me? And it found me and it found me well? No, seriously, what does it mean? What does this stupid phrase mean? And why is it at the beginning? And you're right, it's obviously from ChatGPT because it's followed by a lengthy sales pitch that goes on and on and on and never gets to the point.
What were they trying to sell you with this opening?
It's usually some service, or maybe we can get more podcast listeners. LinkedIn is filled with, I hope this message finds you well.
Yeah, LinkedIn has become a spam network. Nobody likes LinkedIn anymore. They're all, you know, like, I've got to curate my feed. I've got to close everything down. I can't accept any more connections. It's a mess. They really hoard that. Once Microsoft bought it, they hoard that thing out. They made it bad. They really made, I think they probably let ChatGPT loose on us. Everybody could grab all the emails and profiles and just spam away. That's all that AI is good for. Spam, deepfakes, humor.
Humor.
Humor, yes. And some Python coding. Okay, I'll give you that. Use some PHP scripts. All right. Dynamite. Before we even get started, John, we have breaking news. It came in this morning over the transom. Breaking!
Again with breaking news. Sources are confirming to Fox News that National Security Advisor Mike Waltz is out.
Out!
As well as his deputy,
chaos.
Alex Wong.
Chaos.
Additional names are likely to come, we're told, and we expect to hear from the president on this soon. I'm Harris Faulkner. You are in the Faulkner Focus.
I'm in the Faulkner Focus. Oh, no!
State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce is also with me.
I love this. We have not had Tammy Bruce show up in any real capacity. This is exciting.
She's been on a lot. You just haven't seen her.
Well, no, but she hasn't been on the show because now it's breaking news. Breaking. And Tammy Bruce is going to tell us exactly what happened. Or is she going to waffle a bit and be a propagandist, which was exactly the opposite of what she was when she wasn't working for government? I wonder which Tammy we'll get.
First, though, let's get the news of what's coming together right now. Tammy Bruce with the State Department is with us right now. So first of all, just kind of top line this for us. I mean, Jennifer has given us the news.
Top line. Now, if someone says to you, John, we're going to John at the State Department, top line this, what would we be expecting to hear from you?
Probably the most succinct explanation that explains everything right off the bat, the top line.
And this is why we have no career.
Opening.
We have no career in broadcasting.
The opening.
The headline.
The lead.
The headline.
From the State Department perspective, Tammy.
Well, here's what I can tell you when it comes to...
Here's what I can tell you, which is nothing.
Well, here's what I can tell you when it comes to national security for the country, the nature of the president...
Oh, a little laugh tail in there. I hadn't noticed that when I was clipping it. When it comes to national security for the country...
Well, here's what I can tell you when it comes to national security for the country, the...
What is it with the laugh tail, Tammy Bruce?
...nature of the president, who's involved in making determinations about this nation's trajectory, of course, economically,
trajectory.
When it comes to security. And what we've seen and what we know from President Trump is he's been very clear that his commitment is to diplomacy around the world. He is clearly an active and engaged president. That, I think, is an
blah,
understatement.
Blah, blah.
This is a man who comes from business, where his vision...
Blah, blah. This is so disappointing from Tammy Bruce.
And his understanding of what needs to occur is the guiding hand of everything that happens in this government. And, of course, he is hands-on, literally, when it comes to making things happen, when it comes to the implementation.
He has hands-on walls? What was he doing?
I don't know. He was touching him.
Policies, et cetera. At every department, every day, whether it's the State Department or the Department of Defense, or, of course, when it comes to who he chooses to advise him.
She gives us nothing. What kind of top line is that, Tammy Bruce? The disappointment of the century. We loved you. We loved you on Fox. You were there to tell us, to tell it to us straight. We loved you. No. No. Okay. So let's do some propaganda.
That mission was done well.
So now they're talking about the mission of which the top secret details were leaked on the Signal and Signal
Gate. Oh, the Houthi bombing.
The Houthi. So we're going to move from, let's not talk about what happened, to, that was a great mission, mission accomplished.
That mission was done well. It was completed well. And I think it's worth stating that. That through all of this, this is a leadership move now that's happening. But the actual mission that President Trump wanted worked out very well. Your last quick thought, we'll move forward.
But last quick thought, you've given us nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, well, I think that's it. When we're looking at the choices that are made, when it comes to whether it's the Houthis, the nature of diplomacy with Iran, which, of course, always continues, bringing people to the table regarding Ukraine and Russia, the situation in Gaza, the critical minerals deal, which is actually a much broader deal with Ukraine, with money and resources that will be reinvested into Ukraine.
What?
And it's
propaganda
building after this horrible carnage that has unfolded over 3 years. So you've got major successes, economically and otherwise, as inflation goes down. It is a historic first 100 days. It has been aggressive. It's been exciting. And America is wants to change by electing President Trump. And we're seeing the benefits of his vision on every single framework. And it's been a success. It will continue to be a success.
Complete and utter bull crap. Propaganda.
That was terrible. She did. That was a bad performance.
No, it was disappointing. Disappointing, Tammy Bruce. I have a feeling that was the Laura Logan spot. I think she was supposed to get that spot. I don't know why she didn't.
Laura Logan would have done a better job than that.
Well, that's the problem, because this is clearly, let's just do some propaganda. Because it's 100 days. Now, just before we move on, I received,
before we start, I have some thoughts about this waltz thing.
Well, can I just give you a boots on the ground real quick? Because we have the best producers, and I've got many producer boots on the ground. Regarding Signalgate, then yes, I want to hear your thoughts about waltz. As a military contractor, writes our boots on the ground producer, with the Army and as a Navy reservist, we are required to use Signal in CONUS and OCONUS, which I think is Continental United States. And what's OCONUS? Oh, Continental United States. So the narrative that it's a commercial app, which you guys debunked, is false. DOD uses it as the app of choice for OPSEC, operational security. I embed with the 160th, FORSCOM, which is an unknown acronym to me. All chats between us contractors and our Army counterparts are on Signal. WhatsApp is only used by rear detachment Air Force units. Get in the back, you WhatsApp people. By the way, Michael Strickars is a douchebag.
Just throw that in.
He says he turned me on to you in 2019. He doesn't donate, so he's a douchebag. So whenever they say commercial app, it is a requirement within the Department of Defense. So this is all on its face bullcrap. But clearly someone had to go. And I guess today we now know it is Waltz. Your thoughts?
Well, Waltz and Wong.
Wong was the problem. That's what everyone thought.
Well, we think it was the problem. I'm wondering whether or not, because Waltz was set up with his Signal system by the CIA directly, according to him.
Yes, and Wong was...
They set him up. I think this could have been a setup to get rid of him.
Yes, he's annoying.
He was not a guy that anyone liked. They didn't... In fact, people that were Trumpers didn't like him either. But what's convenient here is that he could also have been a bargaining chip with trade talks with the Chinese.
To get Sum Ting Wong back?
Because something Wong.
Something Wong?
Mm-hmm. So Wong was a Chinese national and who's anti-China, and Waltz was one of the biggest China hawks.
Mm.
So let's get rid of those two guys, and we'll start to talk. And I think they may have been sacrificed.
Yeah, you mean,
set up to begin with.
Yeah, set up and sacrifice.
And then the excuse will be, well, you know, that this signal thing, somebody had to take a fall for it.
Even though it is a required app, which makes me question the signal even more now.
Yeah, CIA. It's got a back door, obviously.
It has to have a back door. It must have a back door.
Sure.
Well, all this comes amidst the most important thing, and I did the calculation this morning. We today, John, as of today, May 1st, 2025, are celebrating 6,397 days of broadcasting to Gitmo Nation. Congratulations, sir. This is where you say congratulations.
Congratulations?
Yes, congratulations, because it's a lot more than
the scare. President Trump, the first 100 days continues.
It continues. First 100 days.
What is this 100 days thing all about? I mean, I don't remember this the first Trump go around. I don't remember during Biden. The only last time I remember the first 100 days was, I think, when Steve Jobs rolled out the Macintosh.
No, I think 100 days has been around. It has.
Well, they're milking it.
Well, of course they're milking it, including the BBC.
Donald Trump has been marking 100 days since he was sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. And in case you missed any of it, here's a reminder of the story so far.
Yes.
From this moment on, America's decline is over.
Over.
I'm about to sign some very important executive orders.
Military personnel to assist Border Patrol.
30,000 beds in Guantanamo to detain the worst criminal illegal aliens. The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip. We'll own it.
Air Force One is currently flying over the recently renamed America.
If all of the hostages aren't returned, let hell break out.
The Department of Government Efficiency moves to revamp and shrink
I love the little drum roll in the background.
Of the federal government.
People voted for major government reform, and that's what people are going to get.
A dictator without elections. Zelensky better move fast.
Should I run again? You tell me.
You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine?
You're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now.
Tariffs, you know, they're all set. They go into effect tomorrow.
Hopefully we can get a ceasefire from Russia.
There were nearly 200 who were sent to El Salvador.
Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it.
Details of the U.S. attack plans were first shared 2 days early with Jeffrey Goldberg.
I don't know anything about it. We have to have Greenland.
This is Liberation Day. The United States will implement reciprocal tariffs.
We've been meeting with China.
We're putting a lot of pressure on Russia. You have to have Ukraine want to make a deal, too.
America is back.
You know why they didn't do this for Biden? Because all they would have for the montage is, I'm not Russia.
Dignity.
Do you remember back in 1984 when Ronald Reagan became president?
Became president in 1980.
He was reelected in 84.
Yeah.
Right. Do you remember the Morning in America campaign?
Vaguely.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. With interest rates at about half the record highs of 1980, nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes. More than at any time in the past 4 years. This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married. And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future. It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than 4 short years ago?
It's Morning in America. It's one of the most famous ads of its time, and we have a modern-day version.
It's a new day.
sun is rising, the birds are singing, and things are returning to normal. It's norming in America. Today, we're actually arresting shoplifters, and fewer businesses are being burned down. All over America, pronouns are being dropped from bios. Men are not having babies, and fewer drag queens are flashing their genitals at children. Videos like this one aren't being shadow banned as much. People are saying master bedroom. And look at that. White people are reappearing in commercials. Oh, and guys, we can say guys again. America, the fever has broken. Now we can be sensible, nicer, and normal. Join us. And let's never go back to those weird, angry, divisive times again. It's norming in America.
That's right, baby.
Have a great norming. You hear?
Same PR team, clearly. It's norming in America.
It's very funny.
Yeah. That, I like that. I thought that was good.
That brings me immediately to a nutball clip.
Okay. Are you on the mic, man? Are you talking? Are you spitting in that stuff?
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm going to jack you up some more.
Jack me up.
The opening show things write themselves. Okay. That brings you to a clip immediately, you said. What kind of clip?
This is the ranting lunatic chick.
Wait a minute. You're going straight to TikTok? Can we do this early in the show? Can we handle it?
Maybe not, but this is definitely it will set the tone.
You know what? Okay, I know I'm insane, and I know I'm the internet's favorite crash out. What I'm going to say right now...
Wait, clash out?
Crash out.
Clash out. I like that.
Crash out. Crash, crash.
She said crash out? I thought it said clash
out. I think she said crash out.
Crash out, crash out.
You know what? Okay, I know I'm insane, and I know I'm the internet's favorite crash out. What I'm going to say right now is I'm not paying my debt anymore. What we're doing from this point forward is a debt strike 2025. If I have to do it alone and be insane, I will. I literally will. The fact that we would continue paying our debt, we can't stop paying our rent because that's too crazy. It'll put a lot of people in harm. I'm sick of protesting. It does nothing. I don't want to go to war because look how skinny my arms are. We have to do something. I'm not paying my debt. You can join me on this or you cannot. I'm going to take a picture of, and I'm going to keep records of the debt that I have right now, because when the interest rates go up on that, I'm not paying those either, even when they start to meet our demands. And the demands are as such.
Oh.
Abolish ICE. Okay. I want those men home from El Salvador. I don't care. And
oh, man.
We need to protect Medicaid. The Department of Education needs to be restored. I want critical race theory in the classroom,
sure. Period.
We need to literally be delusional. I'm going to be delusional right now. I will stand here right now, be delusional, make fun of me all you want. This is what we need to do. This is what we need to do. And if they don't meet our demands, then what we're going to do is then we're going to stop paying our rent. But for right now, stop paying your bills. Stop paying your debt. We're going to start there. And it's like, what the fuck do I have to... Oh, my credit score for the house that I'll never buy? I already am not allowed to rent because I don't make enough money. I have to have a cosigner anyway, so what does my credit score even fucking matter?
Ah!
What does it matter, bro? Literally, what? I want Doge out of office. We're done with him. We're done with him. And free healthcare for all people. I'm so dead serious. Guys, we're done with this.
I love that she called herself delusional. That is some...
that's a bipolar episode.
No, that's engagement farming on TikTok.
I think yes. You have to see her. She's pretty serious.
No, this is... It's all an act. It's all an
well,
act.
Well, she's pretty good actress then. Well, she's pretty funny.
She got on the No Agenda show. I'll give her that.
Yeah, well, she did. But this is part of, there's also another movement going on besides not paying your bills. There's a, none of this is going to work, of course, because it's a very small minority.
Yeah, it's norming in America.
People calling for the what's illegal, which is a general strike.
Yeah.
And they're calling for a general strike, and I think it was for May Day of next year, maybe.
Oh, they're getting ahead of the game. They're front running the strike.
But there's I'm noticing it's starting to show up more and more about it. Let's do a general strike. That's going to do it.
Well, today is, of course, a dual celebration.
Today's May Day.
And what is May Day?
May Day is workers. It's the workers' day. This is the day of
commies.
Of the working man.
Commies.
What? It's communist holiday.
Yeah, communist holiday.
Yeah.
Would you be surprised to hear that this falls on the exact same day as the National Day of Prayer?
Well, I know it is the National Day of Prayer because Trump was on the air.
Of course.
And he just could not stop talking.
It's called counter-programming, man. It's like, we're not going to pay any attention to the commies. It's National Day of Prayer. Yeah, it's good. It's counter-programming. It's a good
World's job. Workers' Day. Workers unite.
Pray. Pray. Anyway, it is 100 days.
It's also a show day.
It is a show day. Of course. It's a triple threat. It is Workers' Day. It is National Day of Prayer and a show day. What more can you do? But we are celebrating 100 days, and President Trump chose ABC to do his 100-day, his 100-day
100-day excoriation of the media.
Yes, and most of this was about Kilmer Abrego Garcia.
Let me ask you about one man in one court order. Kilmer Abrego Garcia, he's the Salvadoran man who crossed into this country illegally, but who is under a protective order.
I think to get into the White House Correspondents' Dinner, you had to pronounce Kilmer Abrego Garcia properly, otherwise you weren't allowed in.
That he not be sent back to El Salvador. Your government sent him back to El Salvador and acknowledged in court that was a mistake. And now the Supreme Court has upheld an order that you must return him to facilitate his return to the United States. What are you doing to comply?
Well, the lawyer that said it was a mistake was here a long time, was not appointed by us. Should not have said that. And just so you understand, the person that you're talking about, you know, you're making this person sound, this is a MS-13 gang member, a tough cookie, in lots of skirmishes, beat the hell out of his wife, and the wife was petrified to even talk about him, okay? This is not an innocent, wonderful gentleman from Maryland.
I'm not saying he's a good guy. It's about the rule of law. The order from the Supreme Court stands
into our country illegally.
You could get him back. There's a phone on this desk.
I could.
You could pick it up, and with all the power of the presidency, you could call up the president of El Salvador and say, send him back.
Yep, now, and if he were the gentleman that you say he is, I would do that.
But the court has ordered you to facilitate that.
I'm not the one making this decision. We have lawyers that don't want to do this.
But the buck stops in this office.
No. I follow the law. You want me to follow the law? If I were the president that just wanted to do anything, I'd probably keep him right where he is.
The Supreme Court says what the law is.
Yeah, this was so good because the president really thought that he was going to get a pass somehow. But this, I chose you. I chose you, ABC. I chose you, Terry Moran.
Listen, I was elected to take care of a problem that was, it was a unforced error that was made by a very incompetent man, a man that turned out to be incompetent, that you always said was wonderful, great genius, right? And now you find out all of the media now, they're saying what a mistake they made. A man who was grossly incompetent allowed us to have open borders where millions of people flowed in. I campaigned on that issue. I wouldn't say it was my number one issue, but it was pretty close.
Right up there.
I campaigned on that issue. I've done an amazing job. I have closed borders. He said you couldn't do it. You wouldn't be able to do it. It would never happen. Well, it happened, and it happened very quickly. Wait a minute. When we have criminals, murderers, criminals in this country, we have to get them out, and we're doing it.
And here comes the bone of the contention. The tattoo.
You'll pick out one man, but even the man that you picked out, he said he wasn't a member of a gang. And then they looked, and on his knuckles, he had MS-13.
There's a dispute
over that. Wait a minute. He had MS-13 on his knuckles tattoo.
Oh, he had some tattoos that are interpreted that way. But let's move on.
Wait a minute. Terry.
He did not have the letter MS-13.
It says MS-13.
That was Photoshop.
Photoshop, Terry. You can't do that. Hey, they're giving you the big break of a lifetime. You know, you're doing the interview. I pick you because, frankly, I never heard of you, but that's okay. But you're not being very nice.
We'll agree to disagree. I want to move on to something else.
Terry.
Agree to disagree.
Do you want me to show you the picture?
By the way. That is the lowest of the low outs. I agree to disagree.
I know. I hear it on podcasts all the time. You and I, we just fight. We never agree to disagree. It's like, you're wrong.
I don't think we've ever, I never thought about this, but in 17 years, I don't think we've ever used that phrase on each other.
We've never gone to bed angry at each other either.
Well,
that's
who
that's,
cares?
Terry, but you're not being very nice. He had MS-13 tattooed.
We'll agree to disagree. I want to move on to something else.
Terry, do you want me to show you the picture?
I saw the picture. We'll think it was Photoshop.
Well,
Here we go.
Don't Photoshop it. Go look at his hand. He had MS-13.
He did have tattoos that can be interpreted that way. I'm not an expert on them. I want to turn to Ukraine,
Terry,
I want to get to Ukraine.
No. He had MS, as clear as you can be, not interpreted.
It's Photoshop.
This is why people no longer believe the news, because it's fake news.
In El Salvador, they aren't there. But let's just go. They aren't there when he's in El Salvador.
They weren't there, but they're there now, right?
No.
But they're
in your picture.
Terry.
Ukraine, sir.
He's got MS-13 on his knuckles.
All right.
Okay.
Right, well, we'll take a look at that.
You do such a disservice.
We'll take a look at that.
Why don't you just say yes, he does, and go on to something else?
It's contested.
So this is a contentious issue because many people have emailed me this saying, Trump, he's not doing his homework. He should just take the L. It was Photoshopped. Now, there's two pictures.
There's one of them's got some, you'd call it Photoshop. Explaining what the symbols mean, MS-13. That's what the Photoshop part is.
No. It is MS-13 on his knuckles. But the second photo taken in Ukraine, you don't see that. In fact, what you do see is his knuckles are all smudged. That's the Photoshop.
No, the MS-13, there's no M on his knuckles.
No. They showed a picture of MS-13 on his knuckles. They showed that picture.
That's the Photoshop version.
I wonder if that's Photoshopped.
It is. It's obviously, if you look at it carefully, it's just the letters are too clear. Because the symbols mean MS-13. That was the idea.
But I'm just saying the pictures they showed in this piece showed what you call a Photoshop. But I would say the other picture where his knuckles are completely smudged, that's a Photoshop.
I think that's Photoshop too.
They could both be Photoshop. But yes, the symbols stand for MS-13.
Yeah, that's all there is to
it. And he beat up his wife. Since when are we cool with that?
Apparently, there's another report that came out this morning where he also did something. He also beat his wife into. There's some other beating that took place. It's
more
part
beatings.
Of this whole thing. More beatings.
Yes, you are listening to the No Agenda Show.
Still ahead.
I'm asking the justification for going after people you don't like.
We'll be back with more of Trump's 100 days or not. So that was big from the M5M this week. 100 days. What's happened? 100 days. 100 days. 100 days.
Well, I don't have any 100 day stuff. I have what the Democrats did, which I thought was the best part of the week.
Oh, this is with the Hog Kid?
Oh, no, the Hog Kid's not that interesting. I thought the thing I thought that was interesting was the sit-in.
That started on Sunday. We saw the sit-in start live on the show.
Yeah, we saw it start, but here's the report, which, holy mackerel, I didn't clip this correctly. I can tell by looking at it.
Do you have the name of it?
Yeah, Congress sit-in.
Okay. Oh, it's okay. We'll roll with it.
Let's see what we have.
Congress returns from its spring break today, but two lawmakers returned to the Capitol a day earlier in protest of the Republican budget plan. You're looking at House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Cory Booker, who held a sit-in that lasted more than 12 hours.
This is one of those moments where we have to step up more as leaders in Congress. We are in a moral moment. And what we need now is not just four congresspeople and four senators, but to get there, we need more people that are willing to stand in this moral storm.
In this moment.
CBS News congressional correspondent Nicole Killian joins us now from Capitol Hill with more on this. Good morning to you, Nicole. Senator Booker there kind of ended that speech and everyone standed up. There was kind of like a roarous applause around him. But what?
I didn't hear any roarous applause on the clip. Did they forget?
There was some applause, but he said they standed up.
Well, he's British.
This guy's British. You bring a British guy in so they can do proper English? No. Yes, they standed up.
I've been standed up all the time.
Why do this? Why conduct a sit-in protest on the weekend? And from what you can tell, did it resonate?
Well, I think a couple of things. You know, interestingly, I did ask Senator Booker after he had that record-breaking speech on the Senate floor earlier this month if this was a sign of things to come from Democrats, because, of course, some have been under fire for not doing enough to combat the Trump agenda. And he did acknowledge the need on the part of Democrats to do more. And so, obviously, this all happened on the House side of the steps, which involved Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
Okay, you can stop the clip. It goes on. This woman is one of those women. I don't know if you ever worked with any of them. They're in broadcasting. They can talk forever.
Oh, it's
yes. They have to be interrupted. They leave very few openings, because when I tried to clip her, I tried to cut out some, because she ran, like, she would use. And she would, there was no way of cutting.
She's unclippable. An unclippable wench,
unclippable,
I tell you. An unclippable wench. Yes, she's no good.
Unclippable wench who can't stop talking.
I want to play a little bit of this hog thing, though, because I just thought it was interesting to show what disarray the Democrat Party is in.
DNC Vice Chair David Hogg was on the lead last week talking about his plan to raise $20 million to unseat Democrats and save seats in primaries.
Now, by the way, the woman you're going to hear talking, her name is Megan. What is it? Do I have it here? Megan Hayes. She was an advisor to Biden, and she has a most interesting speech impediment.
Now the DNC chairman, Ken Martin, weighed in, and here's what he had to say.
No DNC officer should ever attempt to influence the outcome of a primary election, whether on behalf of an incumbent or a challenger. While, you know, certainly, I understand what he's trying to do. As I've said to him, if you want to challenge incumbents, you're more than free to do that, but just not as an officer of the DNC.
From Minnesota, if you can't tell. So Hogg's argument is, just because he's not here to defend himself, there's a lot of dead weight in this party, and we're talking about safe Democratic seats, so whoever wins is going to end up winning anyway, and, you know, we need to rise to meet the moment. That's what he would say.
Great. You don't do that as a member of the DNC. You are an elected person on the DNC. Leave the party and go do that. The DNC is not an idea. That is a Democratic Party. The DNC is an institution with a job to do. People vote in primaries, not the DNC.
Are you sympathetic to his argument at all?
No. Then don't be part of the DNC.
Well, what about the idea that there should be...
Absolutely, there should be primaries. People should be primaried. If that is how our democracy works. But if you want to help the primary challengers, then leave the DNC. That is not your role as the DNC.
Oh, interesting. Now that I listen to her, you can't hear it, but when you see her... Her mouth goes all weird when she talks. That was disappointing.
No, that's interesting. Kelly Evans on CNBC has a funny mouth thing. The worst case example of this was a preacher called Robert Tilton out of Texas.
Not familiar.
And he used to be a televangelist. He's on TV all the time. I haven't seen him for years, but he did a thing with his mouth that you'd watch him, and it was like it would be kind of mesmerizing because his mouth wasn't going in the same direction as his.
It was very odd to watch. Words. And then they brought on this just short Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna, which is just fun to say. Ro Khanna.
Joining us now to discuss, Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna of California. Congressman, always great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for being here. You are one who has actually publicly supported the effort from David Hogg. You wrote on the platform X you think that Hogg is doing incredible work supporting frontline Democrats while giving new candidates a chance to run in safe seats. And you say Democrats should embrace a new generation of leadership and competition. Why is this such a lonely place for you to be?
Ooh, you rebel.
Well, look, I think primaries are healthy. Competition is healthy. I won my seat in a Democratic primary. Many of our members of Congress have won in primaries, and we need a new generation of leadership. Now, I'm trying to reach a compromise with the DNC and David Hogg. And what I've said to David is he can have his organization that is having primary challenges, but he himself should not endorse in his personal capacity while he's vice chair. And that seems to me something that can bring everyone together.
This was such a mistake to bring this jamoke in. I have no idea how that happened. He must have come with money.
Who?
Hogg. This was just purely craziness from the Democrat Party?
I don't know that it was a bad thing. He comes in. Carville's the one who's really jumping all over him. There was a good back and forth with him and Carville. Carville accused him. He's saying, the position you're in, you're not supposed to be supporting anybody. And he's not. I haven't heard anything. He just is theoretical. He says we should bring in new people and have them run in the primaries. He hasn't named names, so I don't know what Ro Khanna is talking about, or Carville for that matter. Then Carville called him out for getting paid, and it turns out that vice chair that he is a voluntary job. He doesn't get paid anything, he says.
No, I'm thinking, this is why I think, I have no, without evidence, that there's money behind him. This kid's not his father. No, we know that. So the other big story, and this was big because
maybe Soros money. It's possible.
Yeah, that's such an old trope at this point.
Yeah, I agree. And Soros wouldn't be trying to put new people in.
The Soros gambit is over. It's got to be new people. It's got to be new money. Soros is dead. Alex is gallivanting around with?
Alex is no good. He's not the powerhouse. He's the old man.
So the other big story, because I know people in the region, was the big blackout, and I have two boots on the ground which will help dispel all of the rumors, innuendo, and bull crap.
The power is back on in Spain and Portugal after one of Europe's biggest ever blackouts, but there are still no answers as to what actually caused it, or how they could prevent it from happening again. Our Iberian co-bureau chief, Aislinn Leng, is looking at this story. Aislinn, what do we actually know?
It's extremely unclear still what caused the blackout, and there is something of a political blame game initiating. We are also seeing an intense discussion about the merits of different power sources. Spain is, and Portugal are big renewables producers. French ministers were saying yesterday, if they used more nuclear power, perhaps that wouldn't have happened. The Spanish prime minister has firmly rejected that, saying actually even nuclear power couldn't help us get this restarted. We were relying on a lot of hydro. The Spanish power grid operator has said that this is absolutely not a cyber attack from their point of view. They say there was a massive drop off in power supply. What caused that is becoming a key area of investigation. It is unclear. The Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, is not ruling out a cyber attack.
It's clear that it's very unclear, and everyone's dancing around, and we have some answers. But first, boots on the ground from Marbella, Spain, where our producer is located. Marbella is the hoity-toity place of Spain to be, if you're near the harbor. We've been told the blackout here is weather or net zero based, after public radio telling us it was a cyber attack while it was going on. Interestingly, the communications blackout here in Marbella was much longer than the power outage. We did not have Wi-Fi or cell service for 18 hours while the power was only out for 7 hours. And of course, EU rules around no gas stoves or barbecues on balconies meant we had to borrow a neighbor's barbecue to heat water and milk for the kids. Because of course, you have to have electric stoves. This is one of our producers who can't wait to get out of the EU. So we continue with this Reuters report.
And in the absence of concrete answers, what are the authorities doing to make sure there isn't a repeat of this?
Well, that is the big question, is whether it can happen again. We've heard energy analysts saying that this could indeed happen again. This was, one of the, possibly the only big power cut in the era of green electricity, certainly the largest that anyone can remember. There has been an ongoing debate about, the viability of European grids, whether they are having sufficient amounts of investment in them, particularly now that we are seeing these new sources of power come online. Some analysts suggesting that, you're trying to operate a Ferrari on a country road, and that sometimes that will result in its own challenges to the system. Whether that was the case here, whether there was a third party's involvement, it still very much remains to be seen.
So now they're peddling the line, well, you're trying to operate a Ferrari on a country road, meaning, oh, the grid is just not ready for our sophisticated renewables. So I contacted our dude. Our dude named Ben, who is the protector of megawatts, if you recall. This is his job. He knows, and particularly cybersecurity, zero cyber attack. He said, the problem is Spain. The reason why you're not hearing the truth is that Spain has been bragging about running on 100% renewables.
Yeah, there's some clips that are, there's a lot of visual news clips that like to point this out, and they form memes.
So the truth of it is, at the time of the outage, 77% of generation was inverter-based. I love this term. I understand it immediately. Inverter-based means solar or wind because they generate direct current, and the inverter changes it into alternating current.
Yeah, so it can go down to wires.
And because these renewables do not provide stable power, they fluctuate due to, I don't know, wind changes and
clouds.
Clouds. Martha, I can't watch the TV. They have a base load. Their base load is 15 gigawatts of generation from France. So according to the dude named Ben, protector of megawatts, a substation in France suddenly stopped transmitting electricity. Now, they're not exactly sure why, but they believe that it was because of a fire at the substation. So the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, and subsequently Portugal, suddenly lost 15,000 megawatts of generation from the French that they were reliant on because they were way oversubscribed on these renewables. 15,000 megawatts is a lot of generation to lose all at once. For instance, in Texas, we don't get into an emergency situation until we go down to 3,000 megawatts of spinning reserve. Even on our best day for generation, it would be very difficult for our grid to survive that. Bottom line, emergency levels would be catastrophic in Texas at 3,000. We have about 40 million people here. They lost 15,000. So the whole reason you're not hearing the truth is because of the bragging that they were, we're 100% renewable, and they're not. They were really reliant on this probably nuclear-generated power from France. That dropped out. Everything went to crap. And this is the risk of this insane policy of relying on 100% renewables, getting to net zero. It is insane, and no one's going to want to admit this. So, I mean, we've heard things such as, it was atmospheric fluctuation, a rare atmospheric event.
That story is so bogus.
USA Today even had this. Preliminary reports out of Europe about the massive blackout. The cause may be something called induced atmospheric vibration. Yeah.
What a crock.
A rare phenomenon where weather changes affect power lines. This is a lie. And this is just the beginning of this nonsense. The more they rely on renewables, and in this case, external interconnect from another country, which is a huge security risk for your country. Like, we're reliant upon France. If France drops the base load for us, boom, we're done. So this, it doesn't work. It's not a good idea. Nuclear is not inverter-based, it's AC, it's renewable, that's what they should be going to. But no, instead it's all of this solar and wind, and they're going to keep lying, and I'm sure they'll have a task force, and nothing will ever come of it.
It brings me to my two climate clips.
Boom shakalaka.
I don't know if I have anything on that particular situation, which I thought, I know I heard a lot of stuff, and I'm very familiar with the phony baloney, crazy comment about the weather causing the whole thing. The climate hysteria debate.
Is there hysteria in the international climate debate? Britain's former Prime Minister Tony Blair suggests there is, as he calls for a new approach. It comes after Spain and Portugal were recently hit by cascading blackouts, which some say were made worse by an over-reliance on solar power. NTD's international correspondent Malcolm Hudson has more for us from London.
In a new policy paper, former British Prime Minister Tony Blair said hysteria should be taken out of the international climate debate, saying that voters feel they are being made to make financial sacrifices and changes to their lifestyle in what Blair referred to as doomed policy, despite the fact that, in developed nations, these changes will lead to a minimal impact to global carbon emissions. Blair said that by 2030, almost two-thirds of global emissions will come from China, India, and Southeast Asia, and said that means any strategy based on phasing out fossil fuels in the short term is doomed to fail. But while he appeared to hit out against net zero carbon emission policies, Blair went on to clarify that Prime Minister Keir Starmer's approach to net zero is the right one, supporting the government's plan for net zero by 2050. Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner responded.
Tony's clarified his comments and he welcomes our direction of travel, and that's on renewables, investing in renewables and nuclear as part of the mix, but we can't rely on fossil fuels forever.
The British government rejected Blair's claim of hysteria in the climate debate.
Debate, yes. Okay.
Yeah, this is interesting how these things are starting to fall apart.
It's what is the inverse of operating a Ferrari on a country road? Is it a Lada? No one knows what a Lada. What is an Edsel? Operating an Edsel on
a pedal bike on a
pedal bike on the Autobahn. No, pedal bike on the Autobahn.
Pedal bike on the Autobahn.
There you go. That's what it is. Pedal bike. I like it. A pedal bike on the Autobahn. Nice.
Okay, here's part two.
Now, Republicans passed all of these changes out of committee yesterday, and the goal is to make them part of that broader reconciliation bill, that big budget bill that we've heard so much about, with the goal to pass all of this by the summer.
What?
Reporting.
What is she saying? What is this?
I don't. Is this another missed clip? Yeah. Let it play.
I think you meant to start it here. Hold on a second. I see what's going on.
But Ben Pyle, co-founder of Climate Debate UK, says there is a lot of hysteria driving climate policy.
And this sort of tendency of a lot of people within the global green movement to sort of talk about deadlines, you know, 10 years left to save the planet and so on and so forth.
Many people have made the 10 years claim over the decades, including former US Vice President Al Gore in 2006. Blair said that most political leaders know that the debate has become irrational, but are terrified of saying so for fear of being called climate deniers. A British government spokesperson said that they remain focused on their mission for the UK to be a clean energy superpower while treading lightly on people's lives. Pyle disputed this and said it will be expensive.
Over the next 5 years, the clean power by 2030 agenda is going to lock Britain into extremely expensive renewable energy subsidy schemes.
Over-reliance on renewable energy has drawn criticism in recent days, following the huge blackouts throughout Spain and Portugal. Energy expert Catherine Porter said the initial fault in Spain's power grid was made worse by an over-reliance on solar power, which led to cascading blackouts that lasted for over 8 hours in the Iberian Peninsula.
This folds right into a classic clip I have when he was still the chief of the Bank of England, the central bank of the United Kingdom. The new Prime Minister of Canada, listen to what he was saying then and what he probably still thinks today.
The world's coming to Glasgow. Let's reshape finance for a sustainable world. You demanded action, and now it's time for the financial sector to deliver. To reach net zero, every country, every company, every bank, every investor, every pension fund around the world will need to make some big changes. In the run-up to COP26 in Glasgow, we have an enormous opportunity to bring climate change into the heart of every financial decision. Woo. And our plan will manage the risk from climate change while helping to seize the opportunities from a newer, greener economy. The UK has been at the forefront of innovation for centuries, brimming with ingenuity and a can-do spirit. It also houses the world's largest financial system. Uh-huh. And by bringing them together, we can deliver the net zero world that you've demanded and that our future generations deserve.
You demanded it. You demanded it. You want the net zero.
Nobody demanded it.
No, you demanded it. You wanted the net zero world. That's what's going to happen to Canada. Canada, you're next. How are your renewables doing? It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Might as well get into this.
After a long night and not much sleep, Prime Minister Mark Carney arrived at his office this morning, getting down to work after laying out his vision to supporters last night in Ottawa.
As we come here after this consequential, most consequential election, let's put an end Let's put an end to the division and anger of the past.
Carney says he'll work with all parties, and as the final votes are counted, it's clear he'll have to. The Liberals have come up just shy of a majority. They'll need to rely on the handful of New Democrats who survived their party's implosion, the Bloc Québécois, or even the Conservatives, to enact their agenda. The latest count shows Carney's Liberals and Pierre Poilievre's Conservatives taking roughly 85% of all votes cast, with a less than 3% margin between them. The Conservatives say they're willing to work with the Liberals on the biggest issue facing the country, its relationship with the U.S., with Carney today making another move on that file. The Prime Minister's office says Carney spoke with U.S. President Donald Trump, that Trump congratulated Carney on his win, and that the two leaders agreed on the importance of Canada and the U.S. working together as independent sovereign nations and agreed to meet in person in the near future.
And I think it was you who said, you know, Trump wanted this to happen. He wanted Carney to win.
He implied that he did.
Here's some proof.
Highlighting his phone call yesterday with freshly elected Prime Minister Mark Carney and hinting that on trade issues, Trump seems to see positive progress coming.
Well, I think we're going to have a great relationship. He called me up yesterday, said, let's make a deal.
Deal making now set to at least begin, suggested Trump, almost immediately.
He's a very nice gentleman, and he's going to come to the White House very shortly, within the next week or less.
Trump even weighed in on the election itself when a reporter pointed out Carney won in no small way by targeting Trump and his trade policies. Here's Trump on that and on opposition leader Pierre Poilievre.
They both hated Trump, and it was the one that hated Trump, I think, the least that won. I actually think the conservative hated me much more than the so-called liberal. He's a pretty liberal guy. But no, I spoke to him yesterday. He couldn't have been nicer. And I congratulated him.
Separately, Trump noted not long ago that he's...
If President Trump is saying, you're a great guy, you're a nice guy, this is the time you start watching your back. Something's coming for you.
And I congratulated him.
Separately, Trump noted not long ago that he's already made some 200 trade deals since he imposed his tariffs earlier this year, though none has been officially announced or made public. Today, while slamming another country, he's hit hard with tariffs, China.
The leading candidate for the chief ripper offer.
Trump also suggested again, maybe something's in the works there as well.
I hope we're going to make a deal with China. We're talking to China.
Where any of it goes from here is, as ever, known only to Trump. Though for Canada, a better sense of things may well come soon, with, as Trump now expects, that sit down in the Oval Office with he and Mark Carney very shortly.
And according to NPR, Trump really did get him elected.
Mark Carney has been elected as Prime Minister of Canada, according to the projections from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
This was seen as a referendum on which candidate could best handle the United States under President Trump, who placed tariffs on Canada and sparked a wave of Canadian nationalism. Carney defeated Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre.
Poilievre's momentum began to slip when former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau resigned earlier this year, which gave the Liberals a lift. But the real boost came when President Trump began targeting Canada's economy and its sovereignty. Many Canadians were outraged by Trump's threat to make Canada the 51st state.
It all becomes clear.
Yeah, I thought that I think Poilievre was too much like Trump, and yes, he would have probably butted heads with him. He didn't like him. I have a very strange clip that explains Trump's behavior in general. Mm-hmm. And this is the woman Corcoran, I think's her name. She is on the Shark Tank. She's the female girl there. And she's the one male girl.
Shark Tank. You can't be too sure. You got to be very clear. The female girl, yes.
The female girl. She had an observation that I think is something we should always keep in the back of our minds about Trump. And after I heard this, I also thought that this is what would happen with Bill Maher too.
Donald Trump getting a heck of a compliment from one of the key stars of Shark Tank, Barbara Corcoran.
So I
did a lot of work with Donald, and I can tell you he is the best salesman I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, she's the blonde who does a lot of fast-moving consumer. She does smaller deals but successful deals. She's the QVC lady. That's what she is, QVC girl. Yeah.
I watched him walk into a situation, for example, selling the Plaza Hotel to the Chinese out of Hong Kong. It was in Taiwan. Group of Asians, wealthiest families in Hong Kong. And they were there because they were interested in the Plaza Hotel. And I was a broker, or my brokers, we were all at the table, and we were like really hungry to make this deal. And I watched him totally not pitch the Plaza Hotel, bury it, and talk about the land masses on the Hudson River and the buildings that would be there. They were not the least bit interested. They just wanted to buy the Plaza Hotel. Like a customer, I want to buy it, and Donald was near bankruptcy, really needed the money to bail out. And I watched him. I thought he was so off. He wasn't. They bought the land and built all those towers on the West River as we know it today. You know, all those Trump towers along the river. That was the deal. How did he do that? I'll tell you what his masterful mind does. He is a genius at picking out the vulnerability of someone's personality. He can smell it, sense it, and trust it. Okay. So, for example, if you were to walk into a business meeting with Donald and you're saying whatever you're saying, I've seen it time and time again, he could see what your weakness is and not physically reach over and put his finger on it, but he just could see what your weakness is and play into it. Not the nicest thing in the world, but it's a certain gift I've never seen anyone else.
And it comes in handy in light of what we're doing right now with China.
Yeah, no, she's the older lady, not the young one. The young blonde is the QVC. Yeah, I saw this clip. I thought that makes total sense. And that's what he's been doing with everything. And I think this may have in some degree, you know, since we're talking about rare earths and about the processing, so I've been receiving nothing but tons of information about rare earth processing. Saskatchewan has had a rare earth processing facility since 2020. So they do a lot of this. I have a ton of different places where this is happening, but this kind of folds into the New Deal.
The last time Ukraine was about to sign a minerals deal with the US, it was derailed by a row in the Oval Office. 2 months on, relations are slightly warmer. And just before we recorded this podcast, they finally reached an agreement. The deal creates an investment fund for the reconstruction of Ukraine in exchange for access to the country's minerals, oil and gas. It will still need to be approved by Parliament in Ukraine, but the Ukrainian MP, Maria Metsentseva, welcomed what she said were the improved terms of the agreement.
It's quite a good investment opportunity and a fair deal in the end, where no sort of debts on military aid are mentioned. Everything is done in a manner due to Ukrainian constitution and doesn't breach any oversight of our EU aspirations.
So I thought CBS actually had BBC. CBS had a better report because this is exactly the kind of deal that President Trump was talking about. Give us your minerals, we'll protect you, we'll protect our own assets, and maybe we'll put together a little fund for you, a little hedge fund.
We're going to turn now to news that has big implications for the war in Ukraine. The U.S. and Ukraine have signed a long-awaited deal giving the U.S. access to important rare earth minerals. Ukraine hopes in return to get greater protection from Russian aggression. Rami Innocencia has more on all of this. Rami joins us now. Rami, good morning.
Tony, yes, good morning there. And breakthrough here, while this deal does not explicitly say that the U.S. will keep on helping Ukraine defend against Russia's invasion, like under the Biden administration, that is the hope. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who signed this pact with Ukraine's deputy prime minister in Washington, said that it signals to Russia that the Trump administration is committed to a peace process for what he says is a free Ukraine and over the long term. Details about this deal, though, are slim, but it centers on U.S. access to Ukraine's vast resources under its soil. That includes oil and gas, but along with critical raw materials, that's like graphite, titanium, and uranium for aerospace and technology. Funds from this deal would go towards paying the U.S. for future military aid. and to establish a joint fund for the reconstruction of Ukraine. And, you know, there has been a lot of drama around this deal. We all saw the two sides were close back in February when Zelensky went to Washington to sign an earlier version. But then we saw that spectacular meltdown broadcast around the world. Then last week, Trump and Zelensky met at St. Peter's Basilica. Look at that. Decidedly more peaceful there for the funeral of the Pope. And now we have this breakthrough. But importantly, Russia has not commented yet.
So let's talk about the Ukrainian rare earths.
Well, let's play the NTD clip of this so we can get that out of the way.
Okay.
Ukraine.
Yep, gotcha.
A Ukrainian official is in Washington today. The U.S. and Ukraine just signed a deal on rare earth minerals. Here's more.
Ukraine's first deputy prime minister, Yulia Sviridenko, is traveling to the United States on Wednesday to sign a minerals deal. The two sides were reportedly set to close the deal on Wednesday afternoon until Ukraine requested some last-minute changes. President Trump wants to use Ukraine's minerals as a financial guarantee for the aid the U.S. has been sending to Ukraine.
I didn't want to make a complicated deal. I didn't want to make a deal that couldn't be made because Ukraine doesn't have very much money. They're going through a very bad period of time. It's been brutal.
But Ukraine's prime minister says the agreement won't include the money the U.S. has sent so far, only future aid.
So I think this is still about weapon sales to the EU. They'll be buying it, I believe, because these rare earths in Ukraine, according to Reuters, they don't really have an operational mine.
They don't really have rare earths.
They have no mining roads, no rail, no energy grids, no processing capacity. That's your big thing. Of course, it's all a chaos, and you know the geological data is hardly available. It seems like a bit of a mirage. But the rare earths business that Rubio was doing in Rwanda. Boots on the ground. Adam, I worked in the mining industry for 8 years, lived in Africa for 15, mostly in DRC and Kenya. The answer to the question is Africa has to make peace between the DRC and its neighbors. Rwanda is already doing unofficial processing of rare earth minerals from the DRC. So there is processing, and even crazier, they're going to be processing right up in California at Mountain Pass.
America led this industry for decades with this site right here at Mountain Pass. But due to cost of capital subsidies overseas in China, as well as different environmental standards, we lost our leadership and this site fell into essentially disrepair and bankruptcy. MP Materials has humble beginnings. We acquired this site in 2017. It had 8 employees. It was in care maintenance. Nobody believed that we could compete against China, but we focused on execution and we slowly, methodically, over time, rebuilt this. We have nearly 300 Americans proudly working on this site. When we acquired this site, we clearly realized that multi-billion dollar supply chains don't move overnight. We had to have a long-term plan to restore this site successfully and sustainably. Our first stage, which is largely complete, was to relaunch the operations here. We now produce a rare earth concentrate product that represents 15% of the global supply. We are profitable doing so. Our next stage, which is underway, is to make separated rare earth products and optimize it to be a leader in global industry from a cost and sustainability perspective. Once stage two is done, we expect to generate a significant amount of free cash flow that will enable us to not just making separated rare earth products, but also magnets so we can fulfill our mission of restoring the full rare earth supply chain to the United States of America.
So that's in California, but
what's the name of this operation? I've even heard of this.
Mountain Pass Materials. And there's three more from USA Rare Earth who have processing plants now in Stillwater, Oklahoma, Sierra Blanca, Texas, and Wheat Ridge, Colorado. We are getting into the rare earth business. And it seems that most of them are focused on magnets, which would, I don't know if that's going to be the future of rare earths, but that's what most of them seem to be doing. So between Canada, these four states in America, I think we're getting back into the business. Maybe we can chunk something out of Ukraine if it's really even there.
We might be actually after their oil.
More than likely. I would take that over the rare earths any day. So things are moving.
And if they get the peace deal, we can get the rare earths if we want them from Russia. Russia already offered them.
No, we can get it easy. But we're going to be doing processing. And we have, and we're going to make Canada. You do it, Canada. Yeah, you want to be net zero? Here, take this nasty stuff. Do it. Do it, do it, do it. While we're kind of on this and climate, etc.
It's the neodymium rare earth that's the big attraction. That's for those ridiculous magnets.
Yeah. Is that of any real use, the magnet? I mean, it's obviously
for motors. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
It's extremely powerful magnet.
Well, we need some magnets.
It's the kind of thing where you put two of them together, you can't get them apart.
Your finger gets crushed. You're done.
Your finger gets crushed.
So this is a story that's been brewing. It's been very hard to get.
You're done.
Your finger's done.
It's
been very hard to get a clip, and this is not the one I wanted, particularly because it comes from, Africa News? Let me see. Is it from, Africa News. Here goes the show. But it's about chemtrails, or as we call it, aerosol injection. And there's a lot of people in the UK are very concerned about this because they're talking about it. This is just a short clip about what it is. We all know what it is, but it's even interesting that one of the scientists in this clip describes exactly what has been happening to our climate. And I think it is due to aerosol injection or chemtrails.
The approach would work by planes releasing tiny particles into the atmosphere's dry, stable upper layer called the stratosphere. This would help reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth's surface and helping to cool the planet.
So our study examined a climate intervention technique called stratospheric aerosol injection, which is an idea to cool down the planet by adding a layer of small reflective particles, aerosols, into the high atmosphere. Those particles would reflect a small amount, perhaps 1% of the incoming sunlight. And there's good evidence that this could be used to cool down the planet and perhaps to reduce some climate impacts.
Snowpiercer!
Vulnerable people around the world.
Researchers say that this could be done using aircraft already in service today rather than developing new ones. Despite the lower altitude, it would still be possible to cool the planet by around 0.6 degrees Celsius.
When you deploy...
Listen to this guy. Listen to what he says.
Celsius. When you deploy stratospheric aerosol injection, you can change atmospheric circulation patterns, and so this can do things like disrupt precipitation patterns, cause droughts in some places, cause excessive flooding in other places.
Sounds exactly what's been happening to me.
But other experts have urged caution, saying geoengineering projects like this one don't offer long-term solutions.
So as kind of, the Alex Jones of me would say, this is exactly what they do. Do it for decades and then say, we have this great idea. And we've already been doing it because it's in the jet fuel. And Bobby the Op, RFK Jr., took a question about this yesterday on the Dr. Phil show.
My name is Emily, and my biggest concern is the stratospheric aerosol injections that are continuously peppered on us every day. Bromium, aluminum, strontium, it's sprayed in our skies all day long. And I know you've talked to Dane Wigington about this. He seems to be one of the experts in the field.
Is there a question?
You got a question?
Yes. How do we stop it?
That is not happening in my agency. We don't do that. It's done, we think, by DARPA. And a lot of it now is coming out of the jet fuel. Yes, sir. So those materials are put in jet fuel. I'm going to do everything that in my power to stop it. We're bringing on somebody who's going to think only about that. Find out who's doing it and holding them accountable.
Oh, Bobby, he's a kook. He's a kook. He believes in chemtrails. They're putting it in the jet fuel.
I don't know what he's talking about, jet fuel.
Yes, this has been the theory for a long time.
Yeah, that's a bad theory.
Why?
Well, for one thing, it would be corrosive, but I've tested jet fuel when I was a chemist at Union Oil.
Yeah, that was not
and
in the last.
There's none of these things in jet
that
fuel.
That was not in the last 25 years.
Well, it's, you know.
No,
yeah.
No.
Well, chemtrails have been talked about way longer than when I was a kid, they were talking about them.
Well, the materials she talked about, and I've seen this happen in Los Angeles, where it floated down onto my house, strontium, barium. No, there's something to this. There is some, and it's always been suspected that it's in the jet fuel because you see it coming, and it's not like the guys in the, with the jet fuel. They put all kinds of crap in jet fuel. You can pee in jet fuel, and it'll still work. It's diesel, basically, kerosene.
Kerosene.
You know, so no, I think this is happening. And ever since President Trump got elected, it's been pretty beautiful here in Texas. Blue skies. Ooh. Where we would have every other day, if not days in a row, of chemtrails spreading out all across the sky, making it gray. No, I think this is for real. I think.
Okay, well, you can think what you want. We can agree to disagree.
Chemtrails. Oh, wait until you hear what I have to say coming up. You think that's bad? You're not going to agree with anything I say. It's okay. You got anything? You got any series? Anything you want to launch into here?
Well, let's get rid of the TikTok clips.
Yeah, well, I was hoping you were going to do student loan.
Oh, the student loans, yes.
Everybody wants student loan TikTok clips. The people
okay,
get
let's
on
go
TikTok.
Student loan revamp, part one.
Capitol Hill House Republicans are working to revamp the federal student loan system as part of their big budget bill and efforts to cut government spending. NTD's Melina Weisskopf has the details.
Republicans are working towards ending President Biden's attempts to forgive student loan debt. After the courts rejected Biden's plan to forgive student loan debt, he enacted a workaround through the SAVE program that allowed so many borrowers to pay back $0 on their student loans and not accrue interest. Now, Republican lawmakers are trying to overhaul that entire Biden-era student loan payback program. In addition, Republican lawmakers aim to cap the amount that students can borrow in the first place. The limit is going to be the median price of a college, university, or program of study. The Republican chairman of the Education Committee says the goal with these new limits is to encourage colleges to lower their costs.
Our current broken system encourages students to accept more and more debt without ever addressing college costs. It's no secret that spending in Washington has been a disaster. Waste, fraud, and abuse has left the American taxpayer on the hook for government bloat.
Who was that at the end?
I don't know, but it sounds like Reagan.
It sounds like Reagan, exactly. I was like, wow,
I know, same similar voice
that's
pattern. Probably yeah. A milieu thing.
Mm.
So here's part. Now, the part two is that it's a long story how this happened, but I got these clips kind of screwed up. But the second part is the student loan redux two.
And Republicans are working to make several changes to the Pell Grant. So the goal is to try to limit the Pell Grant only to those who need it most and change the requirements from 12 credit hours per semester to 30 credit hours per year. Now, Democrats said it's unfair for untraditional students with other obligations outside of school, such as who have obligations to family or for jobs. Here's the ranking Democrat member on the committee speaking about it yesterday.
Because they may need more financial support to cover the basic needs like housing, childcare, and transportation. At a time when families are struggling to make ends meet, I'm confused as to why we're making it harder for working parents who are trying to further their education.
Now, the Republican chairman, for his part, noted that the Pell Grant is on track to run a shortfall of $70 to $100 billion within the decade, so he's trying to avoid that. Republicans are also trying to change the Pell Grant to include vocational programs, for example, schools for cosmetology or welding training, any career path that does not require a traditional college degree. If students choose to take those paths, they will qualify for a so-called workforce Pell Grant for the first time.
Okay, so that's interesting, and that's a good stimulus for welders. What happens with the student loans people now have to repay is the question.
They have to repay them. That's what they have to do.
Are they going to have programs to refinance?
Well, there'll be like the reduction programs. If you work for the police department, things like that, they're going to have the same exceptions that have always been in there.
Okay.
But they have to pay. You take the loan out. The real problem, I think it was mentioned in the first clip, is that these colleges, they saw the whole thing as a scam that, free money. Let's just jack our tuition up.
Yep.
And, they get even more free money with the higher tuition. Well, let's jack it up even more. The amount of the tuition fees in not just the private universities, but the public universities are just as high as like Harvard. It's unbelievable what a scam this has become.
I've been looking at some of these endowments like Harvard. Their endowments are huge.
They have over $100 billion or something like that.
So, which is, arguably what we spent on Ukraine in 3 years. It was probably more, but let's just say that's the number. And that's tax-free. The only tax they have is 4% they pay to the colleges. And the rest is just, who's managing that money? What's happening with that?
I think BlackRock's got most
of it. That's the scam, if you ask me. The scam is those endowments, and that's why Trump administration is being hard-nosed about it. They want control over that, or they want to know what's going on with it.
They see it as a possible source of taxation the public can pay less.
Yes.
So in other words, the taxpayer can pay less, and those guys can pay their fair share.
For a start.
Where's their fair share?
For a start, yeah. I mean, especially Harvard. But all of them have huge endowments.
No, all of them do. All of them.
That, to me, is a money scam. Those endowments is a tax avoidance system for mega elites. It has to be. Certainly, if BlackRock's in there, then it can't be anything good. No, I mean, and then the students who get cajoled into a gender studies diploma, woo, yeah. poli sci, they owe $100,000 and they got nothing, nowhere to go.
If they owe $100,000, that's low.
It's cheap, yeah. So, that's good. That's not getting enough attention. That endowment scam is a problem. I got to, did you receive the Michelle Obama clip 20 times?
Which one? The one where she's going on about, there's a bunch of them. Which one are you talking about?
Well, the one that's going around is oddly clipped, which, of course, makes me always go for the original. Oh, it was a slip-up. She's saying she's a man. She's saying she's a man.
Oh, I love that clip.
Here it is.
You notice it's not on my list.
No.
But I thought that clip was terrific. It's obviously chopped off.
But people are sending this to me like, this is clip of the day. This is the best.
It's a very funny clip.
Big Mike is a man.
Just so proud of how you are being a role model for dealing with a child that's transgender.
Absolutely.
And that's, that warms my heart, particularly as a black man.
So the video is the best. So the video cuts to her brother while she's talking. So the implication is, as a black man, you had to deal with me, a black man, who's transgender. And I was like, it's a slip up. She admitted it. Big Mike's a man.
You expected that.
I'm not fighting that obvious truth. But here is the full clip in context where she's actually talking to one of the Wayans brothers about his transgender child.
Well, speaking of parenting, I wanted to talk, Marlon, a bit about,
See, they missed the little Marlon bit.
Just so proud of how you are being a role model for dealing with a child that's transgender.
Absolutely.
And that's, that warms my heart, particularly as a black man. Would you care to share that journey of...
Well, I learned and their transition really taught me what real unconditional love was.
Yep. By the way, notice how Marlon is so psyop that he's calling his transgender child they.
When they went through the transition, I actually went through the transition.
Yep.
I went from denial to complete acceptance. Mm. And it took me a week to get there.
Oh, only a week. It's easy. It's easy, parents. Only a week. Unbelievable. So anyway, I had to get that out of the way because that was all over. You know, the text groups in Fredericksburg are exploding. Big Mike, it's true. JFK Jr.'s coming back next. Fauci's mom was Mother Teresa. Thing. She's a man. She's a terrorist.
No, when I saw it, I knew I was going to, I said, you know, you knew immediately it was like, it was clipped for that purpose.
Yeah.
And I figured you'd go grab the real deal and you'd play it out, so I didn't have to even do it.
Of course I did. Of course I did.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's what I do.
Defending the woman.
Hey, we had a big, a very big bill pass in the House, the Texas House, this week, I think 2 days ago. It's not law yet because it has to go to the Senate. This is the Undisclosed AI-Generated Images and Political Messages Bill. That's not the real title. But it's interesting, and the debate is interesting around it as well.
Former House Speaker Dade Phelan is the one that filed House Bill 366. He was the subject of political attacks and memes in his most recent reelection campaign. Mailed flyers depicted him hugging Democrat Nancy Pelosi, something that he never did. But he says that's not why he decided to file this bill. Under House Bill 366, it requires any political advertising that uses altered images, including generative AI or deepfake videos, to contain a disclosure stating that the content did not occur. Failure to do so would be a Class A misdemeanor. Current state law prohibits the use of AI-generated pictures within 30 days of an election. Dade Phelan says this is about making sure election law keeps up with the evolving AI industry because a deceptive ad could swing an election.
It's a very common punishment when you're dealing with something as important as an election. Especially an election, I could say, is a stolen election. When in the last 72 hours of a campaign, a video could be released that entirely changes the nature of the electorate going into election day.
Several lawmakers lined up to speak against the bill. Some said the bill is too vague and could face First Amendment legal challenges. Some conservatives also said the criminal penalties are too steep and people should not be thrown in jail for political speech.
This is insanity that we would propose such a harsh penalty for simply expressing our displeasure of an elected official. This is anti-American. This is anti-Constitution.
Phelan says he understands that, but the penalties need to be major to make sure that multi-million dollar campaigns play by the rules. The bill now heads over to the Senate for consideration, and it could frankly face an uphill battle because Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is the one that controls the Senate. Patrick and Phelan have had a rocky relationship, to say the least. That goes back to the impeachment of Attorney General Ken Paxton and several Senate bills that have died over in the House over the last couple of legislative sessions.
So this is, again, one of the only interesting uses of artificial, quote, intelligence. I feel you should be able to do that. It brings humor into the process. I'm delighted with it. And yeah,
absolutely.
I'm in total
agreement.
Yeah, put a disclaimer on it, just like the drug.
Screw the disclaimer.
No, I'm okay with a bill that says the disclaimer. Could just do it like the ad companies. May cause anal leakage, you may die. And that's all you need to do. You know, just at the end.
But the thing is, even with the disclaimer, it doesn't matter because some of these things will crop up as memes and they'll be coming in anonymously from out of state.
It's great. I love
them. And it's going to show the guy kissing Pelosi on the lips or whatever. Who cares?
It's great.
But you think it's funny. And, you know, and if you can't counter it, this is a modern era.
Yes.
If you're being besmeared.
You have
to be able to, as a politician,
mm-hmm.
unless you're being libeled, which is different. If you're being different, casually smeared, you have to have enough chops to get out of the smear using your own wiles. Use your own AI. Yeah, you can do the same thing to the other guy. What's that in your mouth?
Yeah. This is the only thing they're worried about, by the way. That's all they're worried about. AI, man. So I did some more vibe coding. I will say, when it comes to getting me actual results with coding, Grok, funny enough, someone suggests, I've tried them all. I've tried ChatGPT, Claude, Cursor. Cursor's not as way too complicated. It integrates with their IDE, and I don't have any of that. I just want a simple script, which I could have done in 2 hours with my buddy Dave, and we would have been done with it. But now it's taking me collectively 3 weeks of at least several hours on several of those days to come up with a simple script in Python. I'm sorry. Grok actually did pretty well. But there's absolutely no evidence of intelligence. It's just looking at the words, the language, the structure, the syntax. It can do all that. And it's just using old stuff that it learned somewhere else. And I know this because when it comes to one particular language, liquid soap, long story, it's doing everything wrong, and they all do it wrong because they all have sucked up the same wrong information. And that whole project is a mess with GitHubs and GitLabs and different documentation. And so it has no intelligence, but it's doing enough stuff that, yeah, okay. This is a $50 billion industry, not a $1 trillion industry. It's still all parlor tricks. Have it write your Dvorak Substack. You won't. You'll throw it out.
I could probably have it do something, and then I could edit it to an extreme. I'd probably spend more time editing it.
Exactly.
Than it would take me to actually write from scratch, which is not an unusual situation.
That's the point. That's exactly the point. But
I can write from scratch, and I can write pretty quickly.
Yes.
But if you can't write from scratch,
you'll write some mediocre word salad that's overinflated, and it'll have little nice little icons next to it. It's no good.
Emojis. And it'll start off with, I'm so happy to find you well.
Yes, that's exactly what you're going to get. Oh, man. So, Eva Vlaardingerbroek. Do you remember her?
Oh, your buddy.
She's not my buddy. I've never met her.
Oh, she seems like she'd be your buddy.
Well, she happens to be Dutch. And she has the I'm Adam, she's Eva. So you would think, coincidentally, also born on September 3rd, which is my birthday.
Well, there you go. You two are meant for each other.
We're twin flames, I tell you. Tina's rolling her eyes when she hears that. So she posted a very interesting video about her iPhone, and I need to share this because if this is true, and I'll take her at her word, it has some interesting implications. And of course she's using it for engagement farming, but here we go.
Hi everyone. So yesterday I got two messages from Apple stating that they detected a mercenary spyware attack against my iPhone. First, I thought it was fake. I got two of these messages and I thought it's probably not real. But upon further research, it turns out that these messages actually are real. And so that this is actually happening. And in the message, they say that this targeted mercenary spyware attack is probably happening because of who I am and what I do. And then they continue to say that mercenary spyware attacks, such as Pegasus, for example, are exceptionally rare and that they're extremely sophisticated. They use really strong words. They're saying that the extreme costs, sophistication, and worldwide nature of mercenary spyware attacks makes some of the most advanced digital threats in existence today. And they're sending this to me because they've detected that it's going on against my iPhone. So this is real. Obviously, I don't know for sure if any of that spyware has been installed on my phone. I definitely don't know who did it. So this could be anyone. This could be name a government that doesn't like me. This could be any organization that doesn't like me. Secret services, you name it. But what I do know for sure is that this is an attempt to intimidate me, an attempt to silence me, obviously. And I can tell them, because they're probably already watching on this phone right now, that it's not going to work. So you can try and intimidate me all you want, but I'm not going to stop. That's all I want you guys, and I want the people spying on me through this phone to know.
So I don't for a second think that they're using this to intimidate her. She didn't know it. They didn't say, hey, we've got your phone. We saw what you did. Send me a Bitcoin. None of that. I think she is being used to infect other people. If this is true, and I'll take her at her word that she got these notices from Apple, which is very concerning.
Well, there is a page. Apple does. I'm looking at it now.
Mm-hmm.
Apple does have a page up about it. And it's called from Apple. And it says about the Apple threat notifications, which is what she's talking about, and mm-hmm. protecting against mercenary spyware. And there's mm-hmm. a long lecture here.
Mm. How do you get it?
So it's not a phony deal.
How do you get it? Do you get it by tapping on a link in a text message?
I'm trying to find out because they're very wordy. This has obviously been written by AI.
No, Apple Intelligence, probably. Not AI, Apple Intelligence.
Which is worse.
Yes, it is.
According to public reporting and research by civil society organizations, technology firms, and journalists, individually targeted attacks of such exceptional cost and complexity have historically been associated with state actors, including private companies developing mercenary spyware on their behalf, such as Pegasus from the NSO group,
mm-hmm.
though deployed against a very small number of individuals, often journalists, activists, politicians, and diplomats. It could be actioned against me, for example, and it's in the drawer as we speak. Mercenary spyware attacks are ongoing and global. And since 2021, we have sent Apple threat notifications multiple times a year as we have detected these. Oh, that's interesting that they can detect them. And to date, we have notified users in over 150 countries in total. It goes on and on.
So I think. I think she was used as a. Well, first of all, your phone is an attack vector on your life. That's just a known fact, which is why I love my Lite Phone 3. It doesn't do nothing. However, coincidentally, yesterday, Tina comes in. Oh, my God. You won't believe what happened to David. So what happened? It said someone took over his phone. He no longer receives his own text messages. That's part of how he noticed it. They stole his identity. They created a driver's license. With a driver's license, we're able to unfreeze all of his credit. He has credit frozen at the three big credit agencies. They unfroze the credit, and then
how do you unfreeze the credit?
Well, you have to. You can go online and say this is me, and they had a driver's license. They had a social security number.
So is he the one who froze the credit?
Yes, he froze it. He had it frozen.
Oh, okay,
like most smart people, you have your credit frozen. So you had his credit frozen. They unfroze his credit. They took over the functions, at least the text messages. So they cloned or whatever they did. And the whole text messaging system is, System 7, whatever it's called, that you just go to some podunk country and say, here's 50 grand, let me on the text messaging system. Okay, here you go. You know, by the way, those Trump messages you're getting, don't tap on the link, okay? It's probably going to get Pegasus spyware or other mercenary spyware. And then they unfroze his credit and immediately went to buy a Mercedes and a Porsche.
Oh, at least somebody's got taste.
Mercedes was okay with him. The Porsche people called him at home and said, hey, are you sure you want this Porsche? And that's how they found out about it. But the Mercedes deal was done. So your phone is a threat vector of epic proportion. And
not my phone.
Not yours, no, and should not be used. And just to complete the whole spy grid, sound like Catherine Austin Fitz right now, after Starlink, which I saw them fly over again last night, and I wanted to take a picture. However, the camera the camera on this phone is shit. So I could not get a picture, but I saw the whole train of lights going right overhead. I think it has to be on a clear night when there's just a little bit of moon. We have a crescent waning moon.
Yeah,
I think.
It has to catch it.
So it caught it.
Because they're over the time.
You just
get to see them necessarily.
It caught it and it was just beautiful. I'm like, oh my God.
I've seen videos right of it, but I've never seen any around here.
So this is my second time seeing them while walking the dog. And now, there's more coming.
I'm Amazon has launched its first batch of internet broadcasting satellites, kicking off its long-delayed deployment of an internet from space network. 27 satellites are now in orbit at an altitude of nearly 630 kilometers above the Earth's surface. Monday's launch from the Atlas V rocket, which took off from Florida, follows that of two experimental satellites launched 2 years ago as part of Project Kuiper, a $10 billion effort unveiled in 2019. Competing with rival Elon Musk Starlink, Jeff Bezos' team claims that the satellites they're launching are now much more advanced than the first two. The company aims to put more than 3,200 of these satellites into orbit. Musk SpaceX has already launched more than 8,000 Starlinks since 2019. Meanwhile, a growing number of astronomers are warning that the large number of satellites is hampering their work and could pose an accident risk.
Yeah, whatever. So they're 600 kilometers, but Starlinks are lower, I think. I think they're closer to 350, 400 kilometers.
Well, let's find out.
Okay.
Consult the book of knowledge.
What? Well,
the book of knowledge is slow today.
I have to type something in.
I know. And on that phone with those little keyboard is very hard. I know.
I'm using the regular keyboard.
I know. There's no threat vector against you. You're clean, man. You got no mercenary
satellites
spyware.
Are 342.
Okay. So Amazon's going to be at twice that height, which will induce latency.
Yeah, that's no good.
Doesn't seem like it's good. But did you hear that? 8,000 satellites?
Yeah, I heard that.
That's a lot, man. And you know, everyone's also jacked. Oh, yeah, soon my T-Mobile phone will be able to use Starlink. Okay. Talk about a threat vector. All they have to do then is just target, zoom in, enhance, rotate, fire.
Yeah, pretty much.
You'll be done.
First they'll be targeting the cartels in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we bring back ham radio for the kids. It was much better. Yeah, you know, short bursts.
Yep.
You know, and you can do it. You can
push a button.
You can send text messages to each other. It looks cool. You walk around school. Kids would be like,
yeah,
wow.
With the thing on your belt. Yeah. Making a racket. CQ. CQ.
I don't know about CQ. All right. Do you have any more sequences? Because I have something I want to try and roll out, and it's going to be difficult, and you're going to hate me for it. So I want you to get whatever you have that you want to get out of the way. Let's do it.
Well, yeah, let's do the I want to play some data stuff from the USDS, the Department of Data, whatever service, U.S. Department of Data Service.
Oh, that's the original name for Doge?
No, this is a group of, well... No,
yeah, yeah,
but
it's, yes, the United States Digital Service. That is the original name for Doge.
Kind of, but they're bitching and moaning because they're getting fired, but they make some good points. That this is on NPR, which is, you know, they're big supporters of haters of Doge and the supporters of everything that's in government. But this woman makes a good point, and it's the stuff we talk about. And I don't know what they're going to do about it.
Karen Moronsky Chapman never saw her job as political. She just wanted to make the government work a little better.
I joined USDS to help people, to help the American people to deliver better services.
She's a data scientist. And for the last couple of years, Karen's been quietly working deep inside the federal government at a little known agency called the United States Digital Service, or USDS. This is her first media interview.
A lot of what I was doing was trying to bridge the different data silos across government. Really just help agencies be more efficient and effective by using data to inform decisions.
You can think of the USDS as a kind of help desk, though that would be underselling it. It's more like help desk meets SEAL Team 6, a kind of special ops team for broken websites. When federal systems start to fall apart, it's the USDS that gets the call. Like in the spring of 2024, when the Department of Education rolled out its new FAFSA application. That's the form college students use to apply for federal financial aid. And last spring, it broke, in a spectacular way.
The Department of Education just found a calculation error on hundreds of thousands of student aid applications.
Forms failed to upload, pages led nowhere, students born in the year 2000 walked out completely. It was chaos.
The FAFSA fiasco was pretty on par with like healthcare.gov. Like it was pretty close to being a healthcare.gov situation.
Healthcare.gov. That was the catastrophic rollout of the Affordable Care Act, what we call Obamacare these days. The website to sign up crashed just 2 hours after launch.
Yeah, just to confirm, United States Digital Services was renamed by President Trump to DOGE, and they're using the same terms, connecting the data silos, acting as a help desk. So this is one of the unsuccessful data scientists who were there and really weren't able to achieve anything except a very expensive Obamacare website.
Hold on. She's still there. This is the thing that's weird about this story.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Let it go.
It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say it became a national embarrassment. So disastrous, it prompted the government to create the USDS to be a rescue team for things like this. So when FAFSA fell apart in 2024, it was Karen and her team who stepped in. They stabilized the site, unlocked access, and got students the aid they needed. They've done this kind of work for the CDC, Social Security, education. It's high stakes, high pressure, but Karen loved it.
It's really easy to get addicted to this work because it's so meaningful. There's very few roles that you can be positively impacting the lives of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people.
And for a while, it felt, well, safe, totally immune from the churn of politics.
Yeah, like technology is not political. Like technology should be nonpartisan. It doesn't matter who's president. I'm here to serve the people. But I was wrong. DOGE has proved that there technology and its use can be highly partisan.
The Department of Government Efficiency is charged with rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse. But when it made its way to the U.S. Digital Services Department, it appeared to be taking an agency built to protect the government's digital systems and started doing just the opposite.
A good analogy is it's like Jenga. And at some point, DOGE is pulling out pieces and something's going to topple and we may not be able to put it back.
Wasn't Kara Swisher's ex-wife in charge of it for a while, Megan? Didn't she go there?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I think she did. I think she did. And was it Matt Cutts from Google? He was there for a while, the guy who did Google search. They had, you know, what they were doing is they were the ones that were mining everything, getting all the data for Obama. That's what those guys were doing. I remember this. We talked about it ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum, I tell you. So okay, she doesn't like DOGE. DOGE is weaponizing my department. Is that the story?
I think she lost one of her friends or something, but to DOGE, you know, that got fired. I can't really tell, but she has a complaint coming up that is valuable.
I remember when I heard that they had right access to Treasury, I was like, oh my gosh, like you can break things.
And not small things. Trillions of dollars worth of things, like Social Security and tax refunds.
The majority of folks I see having been hired into DOGE are very junior. These systems are not going to be anything like anything that they have seen before.
Take the Social Security system. It was built in the 60s and 70s, and it runs on COBOL, a programming language that is two or even three times older than some of the DOGE staffers.
They clearly don't understand COBOL when they were like, oh, there's 150-year-olds at Social Security.
Elon Musk talked about that during an interview on Fox.
The date gamut.
Cursory examination of Social Security, and we've got people in there that are 150 years old. Now, do you know anyone that is 150? I don't. Okay.
And Musk said it was proof of fraud, except Karen says it actually wasn't.
And it's like, no, that's the default date for COBOL. Like, if the field is missing, just the default date, that's why there's all these 150-year-olds.
These 150-year-olds weren't getting checks. They just didn't have a birth date in the system. And Karen said she would have told the DOGE people as much if they'd only asked. But they never did. They just assumed they knew better.
Well, we had that from our dude's name, Ben, the day after this story broke about the 150-year-olds. Now NPR's showing up with the story. 6 minutes worth of story.
Yeah, this is pretty funny. But yeah. But she does. The point about COBOL is a good point, but except for one thing that I don't know why it hasn't been discussed. It's not even mentioned.
I mean, why is there no birth date for these people?
No, about COBOL. COBOL is not hard to learn. Any one of these guys who are coding in machine language or assembler or anything, actually, can learn COBOL. It's one of the easiest languages to learn. Why doesn't they just say, some junior guy says, I'm going to learn COBOL. It's not a big deal. That's why it's called a common business-oriented language. It was designed to be used by schmucks.
COBOL, schmoball, just use Grok, baby. I'm sure Grok does a great job at COBOL. You're right. It's common. What was it again? What was the acronym?
Common business-oriented language.
Yeah. It's a relatively simple, unsophisticated language.
Well, it's got a sophistication to it, but it's very, I learned it once. I don't know if I could code in it now, but Fortran's harder.
I like COBOL is for schmucks. That is a t-shirt or a bumper sticker right there.
I mean, it's not for, you don't have to be a genius to code COBOL. That's the point.
Yeah, but I'm still stuck on how come there are so many records in the system where they don't have a birth date. What kind of system are you running over there?
Well, there's that.
All right. So since you broached the money topic with the Treasury there, I'm going to attempt, and I may fail, and I hope you give me some grace.
No.
I hope you give me some grace.
Yeah, this preliminary stuff you're doing right now is already setting up the wall.
I think I can explain the stablecoin gambit.
Oh, I don't know if you can. I mean, I don't. This is going to bore people stiff.
Well, I mean, would you rather play TikTok clips instead? I mean, I did.
I would actually. Yes, but if you want to make the attempt, I don't know why you want to do this.
Because it's of critical.
You want to do it after the? You want to do it after the donation segment?
No. Why would we do it after the donation segment? Okay, I'll do it. All right, I'll do it after the donation.
No, I'm just saying that because it's going to give us a low count.
No, I'll do it after. All right, this is attention. But then if I do it after the donation segment, you can't grouse and go, this is bull crap until the very end.
Oh, I'll save it. Yeah, I can save it.
Okay. Yeah.
But how many clips are we talking about here? You make it sound like it's going to be a half-hour presentation on stablecoin.
No, I think it's probably about 17 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Well, it affects world affairs. I'm just saying. It will affect world affairs. And we have to learn things about what is a euro dollar. Do you know what a euro dollar is?
No, I don't.
We hear it all the time.
I can look it up. It's just easier to look it up, seems to me. I'll look it up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you do that. You look it up, and then I'll play some M5M news to entertain everybody, to keep them listening until we get to the donation segment.
Chills. This morning, anticipation is building for new music from one of the greatest voices of all time.
Yes. Eight-time Grammy winner Barbara Streisand announced this morning she is dropping a brand new album.
We just heard a sneak peek of her first single called First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. The new record is called The Secret of Life, Partners Volume 2. It's a
By
sequel
the way,
to her 2014.
Stop the clip for a second. Since we're on pet peeves. Why don't they use the term like you always use in the past?
Release?
Yes. Release. She's going to release a new album. Instead of she's going to drop an album. Well, is that supposed to be hip or something? Yes. Supposed to be hip?
This is what the kids are talking about, man. You drop an album. And by the way, they're so hip, they call the Hoosiers the Hoosiers, which is kind of cool.
The Hoosiers?
It's a sequel to her 2014 platinum certified album, and it's been more than a decade in the works.
She collaborated on the album with some of the best in the business, including Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney,
First off, two dead guys right at the top. The best in the business.
Business, including Bob
McCartney's
Dylan.
McCartney's alive?
Barely.
Including Bob Dylan.
No, we all know John.
And Dylan's alive.
Dylan's barely alive, and we all know John buried Paul. Stop.
Including Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney, Ariana Grande, Mariah Carey, Hozier, and others.
Hozier!
The album comes out June 27th.
All right, Babs, Hozier. Looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to that. Woo! A new duets album just dropped.
No, she's not.
It's dropped. It's dropped.
Pick it up.
It's dropped. Who saw this coming, everybody?
On the Medical Watch for you this afternoon, a newly found impact of vaccines on women.
Medical reporter Dina Baer is here to explain. Dina.
Lourdes and Ben, vaccines for the flu and COVID can alter the menstrual cycle. It's not a permanent impact, but for women who have a regular cycle, getting a flu shot or a COVID vaccine changed the length of the cycle. Multiple studies confirm menstrual disturbances following vaccines. Now the Journal of the American Medical Association confirms concerns expressed by women. Experts say there's no need to worry. The cycle returns to normal. And there shouldn't be a reason for vaccine hesitancy based on the menstrual cycle impact.
We hammered this during COVID. And we got excoriated for it. This bull crap is
we never
true.
Got it. No,
I did specifically. We had a lot of people angry, and they all came back and said, "I'm sorry, you were right." It interrupted, it disrupted, it increased flow, it became irregular, like awesome, like crazy flow.
Yeah, but nurses were reporting
but
it.
But don't worry. There's nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about at all. Don't worry about it. These people are ghouls. And who saw this coming?
Researchers at the University of Virginia say a new study has proven safe and effective at
safe and effective. You know that's going to be a doozy. This time I actually believe it.
Safe and effective at desensitizing children to peanut allergies.
Yeah, UVA Health Children's researchers tested children by giving them increased doses of peanut protein. Now, by the end of the study, all 27 children were able to eat 500 milligrams of peanut protein daily. 8 children are now freely eating peanuts. Researchers are calling for larger clinical trials to advance what could be a game-changing new treatment for peanut allergies in young children.
Oh, go figure. For years we've been, you can't have any peanuts near my child. My child was no good. Whereas if you just expose the kid to peanuts, it turns out they're okay. Hello?
Well, they were never exposed young enough. That's always been the issue.
Yes. It's like so obvious. People, where's Bobby the Op in all of this?
Yeah, that's what I like. You know, where's the Epstein files?
Yeah,
I got some super cuts that'll round it out.
Okay, super cuts are always good. I'm glad you have them. Yo, you have 3. Holy crap!
Yeah, because they're leading up to the current super cut that's floating around after chaos and threat to democracy. We have a couple of here. We have the moment. This one was a flop.
The strength this that we have.
Sorry.
Is the moment flop? Flop,
the strength
flop?
That we have is in this moment.
Listen to your constituents. Center them in this moment.
But I can tell you that there are a lot of people that are watching his leadership in this moment. This is the moment.
No, I think about what's happening, in this moment. What's important is that we meet this moment.
So are these current Democrats the ones to meet the moment?
What do you want to see us doing right now in this moment?
And which Democrats are actually going to stand up against Elon Musk and Donald Trump in this moment?
The fight that you all are exhibiting is not just what the base wants, but it's what this moment requires.
The strength that we have is in this moment.
Well, by the way, I think we played this one already. In fact, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, next one might be. Talk about this one or the one next one?
No, the in this moment. We played the in
this
moment.
Yeah, the in this moment, but it was a flop. Just the idea is that they're just repeating. This is a flop.
Yeah, that's a flop.
That never worked out.
Yep, that's a flop.
And then we had the threat to democracy. We had the chaos, which I don't have. I mean, those are also super cuts they don't have. But then we have the social media dangerous series, which I think may have played, but this is another version of it because it's got the annoying overlays. But this is another example of something that was they pushed this stuff out trying to. I don't know if they're looking for it to catch hold or everyone's saying these are ineffective.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about trouble and trying to be responsible. One-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Yeah, I'm gonna use these. I'm speaking to the high school class.
Yeah, you definitely use that
about
one.
Propaganda. Yeah, I'm going to show this.
Yeah, to them. And it's like it's an embarrassment. But they continue, and this is the latest one. That I think this is pretty new.
This one I have not seen.
This is the escalation. This is the latest. They're trying to get this into the mainstream thinking that, you know, Trump's escalation. I don't know why. Is that a bad term, or they're trying to equate it with the Soviet Union? I'm not sure, but this is, they're trying to use this, get this word in there, and it's all the same jerks.
We begin tonight with the escalation in the president's crackdown on illegal immigration.
Today's dramatic escalation in the Trump administration's conflict with judges.
The Trump administration signaling a major escalation in its deportation efforts.
Today, an escalation in the Trump administration's battle with the judiciary.
Tensions between local and federal authorities over President Trump's immigration crackdown escalated today.
We begin this hour with a major escalation of the Trump administration's crackdown on immigration.
Begin with what appears to be a major escalation in the Trump administration's deportation efforts.
And what is a major escalation in the battle here in D.C. over immigration and deportation?
This feels like an insane and reckless escalation from the Trump administration arresting a judge. I will tell you, you are not alone.
It's a dramatic escalation.
More aggressive moves, more escalation.
Trump's escalation of his migrant purge.
This kind of escalatory action.
This is a dramatic escalation.
Escalation. Wow, that's a good one. I'm going to give you a borderline for that. That was dynamite. That was good. Escalation. I need the whole Sharpton thing. This is an escalation of Trump. The escalation. I love him.
Call it a migrant purge.
Nice.
Migrant purge.
And with that escalation, I'd like to say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the unclippable wench, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. John C. Dvorak.
Mr. Adam Curry, in the morning, our ship sea Buddhists on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls and the troll room. Hold on a second. Let me count the trolls. Well, I don't know, man. I think your supercut chased everybody away. 1880.
Yeah, I think the threat of your
Oh, hold on. Oh no. Oh, right away we lose the right away. Hold on a second. That's crazy. Right away, the minute you start talking, it switched interfaces again.
Oh. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. I hear you. Can you hear me now? I hear you now. You sound great. I don't know what that is. I don't know
why. Something's triggering it.
Yeah, what? The question is, what's triggering it?
Yeah. Something.
Anyway, 1880 is the count on the trolls in the troll room, trollroom.io, and that is where you can go to listen to this show live. We've been doing it live for a long time. We are in our 18th year, and the troll room is fun. It's ephemeral, because you can go in there and go, troll, whatever, and it just scrolls right off. And it doesn't matter. Then you're just shouting into the void. It doesn't really make any difference. So get it out of your system in the troll room and listen to us live at trollroom.io or get a modern podcast app. I really do recommend it. By the way, I think we talked about Pocket Casts last time. And so there's now definitive answer from Apple that the donate button in the app is okay. So everybody is now doing this. They're adding the donate button into their apps. So
Apple said it's okay, so it's okay.
Yes,
is that the way this works?
Yes. If it's not okay, then you have to use Apple Pay, and we take 30%. Don't you understand?
I see what you're talking
this
about.
This has always been the problem, and the app developers have already been afraid. Like, oh man, my app will get rejected if I put this in there. No. No, you can put it in there. And it's great because then people are listening. I should support these guys. Let me just look at my app that I'm already using. Click, boom. You can support us as part of our value for value method. And by the way, troublemakers abound. We got an AI-generated note from Mel Cooley, executive producer. Did you see this?
No.
An AI review of our show. Urgent content review and advertiser feedback.
I think I did see this. I didn't look at it, though.
Gentlemen, this memo requires your immediate attention. Following the broadcast of episode 1759, we have received deeply concerning feedback from our key advertisers. The response has been negative and frankly threatens our financial stability. Specifically, advertisers have cited the following issues as problematic and potentially brand damaging. The Give on Asian Media Assassination tagline. Did we use that? I don't remember that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either. This was flagged immediately as insensitive and potentially offensive. The lengthy and seemingly unfocused segments.
Did I get this email or not?
No, I don't think so.
I don't remember it.
So AI analyzed our show, 1759, as an advertiser, and they hate it. Several advertisers noted the extended periods.
That proves our complete point.
Yes. I'll read a few more. Several advertisers noted the extended periods dedicated to topics like the Pope's funeral and the minutiae of online hoaxes. They feel the show lacked a clear through line, at times meandering, losing audience engagement, and by extension, the value of their placements. The tapping me along discussion. While intended as analysis, the extended speculation on Trump's ambiguous phrasing.
Oh, by the way, that's interesting they brought that up.
Yep.
Because we know what it means.
Well, there's two versions.
Well, the version I believe to be the right version is the golfing one.
Yes, I agree. I think that's the right one.
Because he's
a
golfer.
Yes. Tapping along as a golf term, tapping, putt, 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 tapping the ball along slowly. There is a second one, however, from producer Andy. He says, in a pig slaughterhouse, there's a guy who uses a rattle attached to a broomstick to keep the pigs moving into their final destination by tapping it on the floor behind them.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
I like it, though. I like the visual.
But I'm glad that the AI picked it up.
And then,
because they picked it up as boring.
Yes, boring.
Now, wait, let's back off for a second. Now, why was this sent in the first place? What is the end game here of this sending this note to us? We don't have advertisers, so it's got nothing to do with any real advertisers. It's some sort of a phony baloney scam.
No, this is someone who thought they could find a good use of AI.
Oh, and this is what they found?
This is it. The extended listener donation segment. Here we go. While listener support is vital, the length of the donation readouts, including personal anecdotes and tangents, was cited as excessive and disruptive to the show's flow. Advertisers are concerned that this extended segment reduces the time available for content and their messaging. And then finally, tone and language. Certain advertisers express discomfort with the overall tone, particularly the use of dismissive language like bullcrap and jamokes, and the sometimes cynical and negative framing of news events. They prefer a more measured and analytical approach. And it goes on and on and on and on.
Wow, you got to send me that.
Yeah, I will. There's even the AI then made a rap song out of it, which I will not bore you with.
No, you don't need that.
It's horrible. It's
I'm sure it is.
Crap. So anyway, time, talent, treasure is how we operate this ship, which means we need your financial support, but we appreciate any kind of time and talent that you put into it, which includes the work that our artists do. They always provide us with a piece of artwork that we can use as the album art and to get attention for engagement farming on the socials, to be quite honest about it. And it always seems to work. People love this one, although I did get the errant, hey, man, if you hate Tim Pool so much, just don't talk about him. You're sending audience to him. Okay. All right, I'm sure. Because episode 1759, titled Eat the Babies.
I don't care about sending audience to Tim Pool one way or the other.
I know, but I'm just giving you the feedback. I'm giving you true.
I mean, if he gets an audience to get some recognition on the show, maybe he'll log roll and give us a plug.
Log roll. It's called pod rolling. Pod rolling. You pod roll. You don't log roll. That's so 2005. It's pod rolling. The artwork came to us from a well-known artist, Capitalist Agenda, and it was indeed the Beanie Boys, Beanie with the googly eyes.
Googly eyes is what made it work.
In his seat at the new media chair. Oh, by the way, I had where do I have that? There was a new guy in the new media chair. Let me see. Where did I have that? And the new guy,
you know, that's an embarrassment being in that chair, it seems to me.
Well, the guy in it this time was Winston Marshall, formerly guitarist and banjo player of Mumford & Sons. He's British, and he now occupies this seat. And I think this was also a set-up bullcrap question. Sorry, advertisers. As he was referring to the sordid state of affairs in his home country of the United Kingdoms.
Is in Britain, we have had over a quarter of a million people issued non-crime hate incidents. As we speak, there are people in prison for quite literally reposting memes. We have extensive prison sentences and for tweets, social media posts, and general free speech issues. Would the Trump administration consider political asylum for British citizens in such a situation?
Well, to your latter question, it's a very good one. I have not heard that proposed to the president, nor have I spoken to him about that idea, but I certainly can and talk to our national security team and see if it's something the administration would entertain.
Yes, please.
Asylum for the Brits, I tell you. That was a setup question.
So we know that chair is specifically there for bullcrap.
It's the setup bullcrap chair. Yes. And of course, everyone goes along with it.
I wonder if they hand them a script. Would you like, do you want to be in the chair this week? Sure. Well, can you do this? And then you give you a script, you look it over, and you decide, yeah, I can do that.
If they
I have to memorize it? Yeah, you have to memorize it. Okay, I can manage that.
Imagine that they said, okay, Curry, you're up. You're in the new media chair. I'd sit there, and then I'd have the script, but then I'd hold up a picture and say, hey, Carolyn, what's this in your mouth? That's what I would do. That
no,
would make
you wouldn't.
Me. No, you're right. I wouldn't.
You wouldn't do that. You know it. The You'd first slobbering over there.
Hey, Carolyn. Hey, Carolyn. Anyway, thank you very much, Capitalist Agenda. You're a unanimous winner. Let's take a quick look at noagendaartgenerator.com. Was there anything that had a lot of tapping stuff that?
Yeah,
really...
no, that was so head and shoulders above everything else. I didn't want to actually use it because I thought, we don't need to
send audience to him.
To send audience. It's not that so much. It's kind of an insulting thing. But it's so funny. You have to say,
Said specifically, it's the googly eyes that make it work.
It is the googly eyes.
It was
eyes.
Definitely the googly eyes. It's fantastic. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, no, Capitalist Agenda has skills.
He's got mad skills.
He's got the little tag with this new media on the earphone. It's idiotic.
It was ever since Tim Pool, you know, the $5 million came out and he thought that it was because he was that good, it just had to make fun of him. I mean, Remember the Russian money?
Oh, yeah. Dude, who can you forget? Yeah.
Anyway, we want to thank everybody. We always thank everybody who supports us with $50 or above at this moment in the show, which is now known as the pre-stablecoin segment. We will be thanking our executive and associate executive producers. Very simple system. You support us with $200 or more for a show. You get an official Hollywood credit that can be used anywhere these credits are recognized, including IMDb. You have to do it for yourself, but you will be able to open up with that credit. You get an associate executive producer credit, and we read your note, $300 or above, an executive producer credit coveted, good for a lifetime, anywhere that these credits are honored and recognized. And we will read your note as well with your executive producer credit. And we kick it off with our anonymous black sheep from Maryville, Tennessee, $610. And anonymous black sheep, who I know the anonymous black sheep sent me a note, actually. And this is it. Thank you for the awesome content. I've emailed Adam off and on. Adam, I'm a recent Christian and do a daily journal. The company is called Daily Kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S. Excellent product I recommend. I'm a military contractor that embeds with Army and Marine Corps units. This is the Signal guy. Signal's the app the DOD uses, end-to-end encryption. I'd like to call out Michael Steerstarch, which is who we called out earlier, as a douchebag.
I didn't realize you've been double douchebag.
I didn't realize you've been double douchebag. That's bad. That's bad. I didn't realize that he donated. Inside baseball, we've had two units move out of Iraq, and the third will be in June when the contract is up. We have other new sites in another Middle Eastern country. Another two sites in AFRICOM. Another site added in the Pacific. Unlike, allegedly, Pete Hegseth, there's no operational security being divulged. FYI, I was on a green suit deployment with JSOC when our boys smoked the Wagner guys in Syria. This is the level of producer we
guys
have.
I
just love that. Yeah, we smoked the Wagner guys in Syria. This is what I'm talking about. This is why we are the best podcast in the universe. And he says, Jingles, you might die. Love you both. Jesus loves us all.
You might die.
Yeah, if you come across the anonymous black sheep, you might die. All right.
You left out that's true.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I have the classic That's True.
That's true.
I actually loaded it up. There you go.
Scott Horton's up. He's in Malibu, California.
No. Five. Who is this Scott Horton? Never heard of that guy. Never heard of Scott Horton.
550-50. hello, John Z, Adam, and the whole Gitmo Nation. This is the other Scott Horton.
Ah, there it is.
I made it out to Leo Bravo's meetup this weekend. What a great turnout and what fun people. I'm donating $550.50 to finish up my nighting. I needed 33 cents to complete to 1,000.
Wow.
And wanted to add Commodore, too. I haven't thought of a good name yet, so that will be coming soon with my accounting. I want to call out, well, I think he's on the list anyway for his Commodore ship.
He is on the list for Commodore ship, yep.
And there's a couple of stragglers, by the way, that are already, there's issues with their Commodore ship, but they'll get it next show. I wanted to call out the Pineapple Princess and Dano as douchebags.
Dario.
Oh.
Not even close to Dano.
Well, if you look from where I'm sitting, about a mile away from the monitor, it looks like Dano.
Get closer, Pineapple Princess. Douchebag. And Dario, formerly known as Dano. Douchebag.
And let Tyrone know that he still has the stench of douchebaggery wafting from him. Douchebag. Thank you, John and Adam, for keeping so many of us sane and helping us to see through the media/propaganda BS. I'd like Jobs, Goat Karma, and Her Head Is Gone, and LG Boom Shakalaka.
And Her Head Is Gone.
Boom Shakalaka. Boom Shakalaka.
Jobs, 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 and Jobs. Let's vote for Jobs. Yeah. You got
Karma.
Austin Carr is next. He's in Miami Springs, Florida, 533.33. Love those 33s. It's a switcheroo. ITM Jensen's, I've already spent many, many thousands so my daughter could become a Vanderbilt University Commodore graduate. I thought, what the heck? Well, another 533.33 would be a bargain so she could also become a no agenda Commodore. Please dub Abby Paulson as Commodore of the Human Resource Producers. So now do I put, I'll just do Abby Paulson. I'll put the whole thing in there. Make it official. Okay. We don't want to get those switcheroos wrong. Baby number three on the way, soon to be 33-year-old mom. There you go, Austin Carr. P.S. Abby is also the wife of the Coast Guard pilot who last year gave an in-the-morning shout-out during his M5M interview after a Gulf of America hurricane rescue. Yes, I remember. I believe such a free publicity donation for the No Agenda show is worthy of an honorary No Agenda Commodoreship. It's your duty. It's your duty. It's your. This is not a...
Exactly.
It's your duty. It's your duty. All right. Thank you very much. The switcheroo has been made, Austin, to Abby.
Sir Marcus in Eagan, Minnesota, 515.38. Guys, this is Sir Marcus of Gurkeland. Gurkeland.
Pickleland, maybe? I don't know.
Gurkhaland. I don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
My sweet stepdaughter, Blair, nicknamed me Commodore years ago due to driving boats on our Minnesota lakes. This is a land of 10,000 lakes. So I thought I'd better make it official. So how about Mark Commodore of Crow Wing County? Thanks.
Sounds okay. Good to me. Yeah. Sir Milkman comes in next from Evington, Virginia, $500. And he just says, Sir Milkman of Evington, Baron. All right.
Zadok Brown the third. In Pukalani, Hawaii. Pukalani, Hawaii, 500. ITM gents had to get in under the wire for Commodore. Mahalo for all you do.
Mahalo for you. Wow, we have three with no note here, so that will be three double-up karmas. The first for SDG in Oakland, California, $500, and a double-up karma for you.
You've got...
I might as well do the other two.
Yeah, might as well.
Brock Reinhold, Fort Saskatchewan, Alberta, Canada, $500. Double up karma for you.
You've got. Double
up. And karma. John Tucker from Omaha, Nebraska, $500. And a double up karma for you.
You've got. Double up. Karma.
Laurence de Coaster.
De Coaster.
I'm guessing.
Laurence de Coaster.
De Coaster in Belgium.
Itchem.
350.93. ITM, John and Adam, keep with the great work. No jingles, no karma. Greetings from Belgium.
Itchem.
And he's got some met, something here.
Met vriendelijke groeten. With, I hope
loves
this,
and kisses. Love and kisses.
I hope this note finds you well.
I hope this note finds you well.
Sir Dibs on Living, North Providence, Rhode Island. That's where my mom is from. 333.33. And Sir Dibs says, ITM John Adam, no jingles, no karma. Sir Dibs on Living. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and you got the next one too, for obvious reasons.
In the morning, John Adam says, Andrew Dechter. And greetings to all Gitmo Nation from Northern Wildcat Territory, FEMA Region Number 4, a.k.a. Northern Kentucky. I come to you with heavy heart. My 50-year-old wife, Angel, was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer in September of 2022. She lost the kidney, underwent immunotherapy and several other courses of treatment, but the cancer still spread. Cancer sucks, and cancer that doesn't respond to treatment sucks even more. After learning the cancer spread to her brain, she finally had enough and elected for home hospice in March. She's finally resting comfortably and seems to be pain-free. She is in her final days, and her passing is imminent. She was a fifth grade teacher and was one of the best in Boone County, Kentucky. She had zero transitions in her class over the years. Angel will be sorely missed, but my three kids and I will carry on her legacy. Angel was not a listener of No Agenda, but she tolerated my zeal for it and didn't complain about my No Agenda coffee mug, stickers, and hats. I wish to honor her tolerance by making her an executive producer for the May Day Show 1760. Please accept this treasure of 333.33 for Show 1760 in her name. I request massive amounts of No Agenda health karma for my beautiful wife in her final days. She needs it. F cancer, please. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, of course. And she's in our prayers, mine for sure.
Fucking cancer.
You've got karma.
Vert Fuller in Batavia, New York, $300. And he sent in a check with a note, which I will read. DNC, $300. And it's handwritten in a kind of a sloppy style. Even when you take the plug out, you two are electrifying. How did I ever make it before COVID when I didn't know about your podcast? You're like a lost and found, I guess. Yeah, you're like lost and found. Referring to a place where you go pick lost and found stuff up.
I mean, I guess.
I would like to give this check donation to making my son Andy a closer, to being a knight. Okay, I don't know if he's on the list or not. Karma for my birthday on the 29th. Is that on the list? I don't know. I think it is.
I'll check. Let me see.
On the list, along with Willie Nelson. No. And then he says, too long a note, when it's not really long at all. It's just hard to read. And by the way, that should be two O's. Sir, short for nothing.
Okay.
Sure.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Wert Fuller. Hold on a second. Yeah, he's on there. Rick W. Cable is in Modesto, California. $300, our last executive producer for this show. Old Knight with first $300 donation on 9/30/2012 promoted my old site, finditclassifieds.com. Now, podgrabber.com, where no agenda is featured, and live stream hubs, podgrabber.com/live/no agenda. All right, podgrabber.com. Go check it out. Thank you very much, Rich, for featuring us and for supporting us.
That's nice. Rich Geisler in San Diego, California, $250, first associate executive producer. And he says, keep it up, fellas. Rich.
Associate executive producership for Brandon Foster from Dawson Creek in BC, British Columbia. My donation of $247.87 USD is the equivalent to 333 Scandinavian plus fees. Okay, you get moved up. You get upgraded. I want to make sure we upgrade you there. For my first executive producer credit for premium electrical service in BC and Alberta Peace regions, reach out to Deep Woods Electrical and Controls. Standby generator, service upgrades, and more. DeepWoodsElectric.com. Reach out with an in the morning for 7.33% off. That's the angel number of your electrical project. Canada may be down, but we're not dead yet. Best regards, Brandon Foster, Sir Foster of the Deep Woods Electron, CEO of Deep Woods Electrical and Controls Limited. DeepWoodsElectric.com. Nice.
Chad Finkbeiner in Highland Heights, Ohio, 222.22 Road Ducks, and he just simply says, thanks for the best podcast on this side of the ice wall. Yak karma, please.
That's a flat earth reference if I've ever heard
You've
one.
You've got karma.
Ah, there he is. We were talking about him during the pre-show amble. We're down to our last bags, Eli, because Eli the coffee guy comes in from Bensonville, Illinois with 205.01 and says, Adam, you're right. America is hooked on cheap Chinese goods. By the way, I see the president just made a comment this morning about the tariffs. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, well, maybe the kids will just have two dolls instead of 30. Okay. We need to move our supply chain to Central and South America to build up the nations in our neighborhood. It may even help with the immigration issue. We just launched T-shirts on our website. I'm happy to say they are finely crafted right here in our own hemisphere in the nation of Honduras. They make great shirts and grow great coffee. So visit gigawattcoffeeroasters.com and use code ITM20 for 20% off your order and stay caffeinated, says Eli the coffee guy.
Yeah, actually, Honduras coffee is good.
Yes.
Linda Lou Patkin's up. She's in Lakewood, Colorado, $200, and she wants jobs karma and says, for a faster, more effective job search with a resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com. That's Image Makers Inc. with a K. for all of your executive resume and job search needs, and work with Linda Liu, the Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You've got karma.
And I believe that is it. No, we have one more. Aaron Parr, Wilmington, North Carolina. Shout out to Matt Parr in Wilmington, North Carolina. They might be related. Congrats on your hole-in-one and being the best new dad. Go Wolfpack! Well, there you go. I love that. I'm sure that's either his sister or his wife. I'm thinking his wife. And with that, that concludes our executive and associate executive producers for episode 1760. We thank all of you who've supported us, and we'll be thanking the rest of the $50 and above donors in our second segment. So looking forward to that. And of course, you can go to noagendadonations.com at any point, anytime you feel like it. And you can set up a donation of any amount. We do love the numerology. So if you got some fun ideas, and they always come in the second segment, all kinds of new donations being made up all the time. It initially started with the 6969 and never stopped from there. So go to noagendadonations.com. And thank you again to these brand new executive and associate executive producers.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Thank you all very much. Wonderful. Hey, John, I've got some stablecoin stuff I want to share with you.
Oh, I'm all ears.
So there is a bill in Congress right now. It is the stablecoin bill. We'll talk about that in a minute. But throughout the past couple of weeks, I've been talking about things like the Mar-a-Lago Accords, understanding the strong dollar versus the weak dollar. What is President Trump trying to do? And the only thing I really had known or knew up until recently about stablecoin is the main stablecoin that is in consideration for use by the U.S. government, specifically the Treasury, and I presume by osmosis, the Federal Reserve, is Tether. And all you need to know about that is a stablecoin is pegged to a dollar. One stablecoin is $1, and it is backed by U.S. Treasury. So this company, Tether, they only have 40 people working there. All they're doing is they're buying massive amounts of treasuries, short-term treasuries, so T-bills, American debt, and they're making hundreds of millions of dollars based upon the interest rate. And for every single dollar they buy in treasury, they make a stable coin. So it's really a way to make more U.S. dollars of the digital kind. And I've learned a lot about this. And we're going to start with Planet Money. So it's kind of a mainstream show from NPR. And it has a little bit of talk about stable coin and the Mar-a-Lago Accords.
Then there's what we've dubbed the weak dollar school. Essentially, because people around the world use the dollar so much, that pushes up the dollar's value and actually hurts American exporters. So the weak dollar school wants to see the American dollar devalued. This school of thought is led by the chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, a guy named Stephen Miron. More than half the world's trade is done in dollars, even when neither country trading is the U.S. Simon boils the weak dollar school down to this.
The cost for America in doing this is that you have a dollar that has been distorted. In his view, basically, this means overvalued, and that has held back American exporters.
A strong dollar means that American consumers can afford to buy more stuff from overseas. And so American factories find it harder to compete with these cheap imports.
And so there's different ways that other countries can begin to address this problem. They could basically agree to buy more American products. They could invest more in America. You know, one solution that he expressed, which I think is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, is that they could just send checks directly to the U.S. Treasury to basically pay them a fee for services. Or, alternatively, America could impose tariffs.
The big idea in Stephen Miron's paper is that leaders of countries from around the world would descend on South Florida, make a grand deal with President Trump to help weaken the dollar, and this would be called the Mar-a-Lago Accord.
You can see how it's something that appeals to President Trump. It kind of intellectualizes his instinctual view that America has been wronged.
Okay. So the problem we have in America is because everybody wants our dollars. Everybody uses our dollars. The dollar is very strong against other currencies. And therefore, our products, when we want to export them, are too expensive. We're not like the cheap Chinese crap. That's why I believe the temporary measure is these tariffs. Now, what I've learned is, and I've heard this term so many times, euro dollar, I never understood what it meant. The difference between the American dollar we have here in America and the euro dollar is exactly that. A euro dollar is every dollar that is in banks or in financial systems outside the U.S. And it's a lot of money. And this money really hurts us, particularly in the hands of China, because they control how strong our dollar is by how much they use it, where they send it, how much they buy, etc. Here is analyst Matt Pines explaining a little bit about the dangers of other countries holding large quantities of dollars, in this case, euro dollars. Don't be confused by the euro part. If it's outside of America, it's a euro dollar.
There's flows of goods coming into the United States and flows of dollars going overseas. And a lot of those dollars are pouring into China. And then China, right, as an entity, as a balance sheet, is then deciding how to deploy those dollars. And it's, you know, in some ways it's deploying them into domestic investment. Some ways it's deploying them into overseas investment, like Belt Road Initiative. But in other ways, it's also redeploying them back into the US and other sort of advanced financial markets, into financial assets, right, into our NASDAQ, into our real estate, into our farmland. And so the US has sort of watched over the past few years how much sort of those dollars are kind of round tripping, right, back into the US. And for certain elements of the US, that's great, right? We get, you know, that's an extra marginal dollar that's going into, you know, NVIDIA stock, and it helps everyone's 401ks. There's such a thing in the DoD, the intelligence community, it's like a term of art, like adversarial capital. Right. And tracking adversarial capital is like a very important mission inside the United States government. So they don't just see dollars going back and forth, international trade and financial investment, as just a sort of fundamentally neutral, you know, cycle of trade and investment. They see it as a security issue. Right. Especially if you see some of these flows come with invisible strings attached. Right. Or often those capital flows have implicitly or explicitly corrupt the political systems that they get deployed in. Right. And they sort of shape over time the political systems in the West. We've seen, you know, stories in Canada and Australia, even in the US, New Zealand, even Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, a lot of these countries that, you know, are very much at the tipping point of where to shape strategic opinion among key decision makers.
So what I understand of this stablecoin bill, which is now in Congress, is the idea is to make all the euro dollars, everything that's not in America, make those stablecoin, which will be backed by U.S. Treasury. So they are backed by something that is supposedly really secure and really good, and that those dollars, because they're digital, can be completely tracked. We know if someone's trying to buy off politicians, and you will not be allowed to use the U.S. dollars in America dollars outside of the United States. If you want the dollar that way, you get the stable coin, which basically is a little piece of a U.S. Treasury, which equals a dollar. And so here's Caitlin Long to explain the stablecoin bill.
The stablecoin bill is going to create for the first time a endorsed differential between an offshore dollar and an onshore dollar. Right. The Fed, particularly because of the control of the European banks on the euro dollar market, what is a euro dollar? Let's go back. It goes back to the 1950s when Russia didn't want to hold, during the Cold War, its dollars in a U.S. bank because it was afraid they'd be confiscated. So it got the European banks to agree to take U.S. dollar deposits. So there was this huge offshore market, which is actually as big, if not bigger, than the onshore U.S. dollar market.
It is big.
And to your point, it hasn't been in control of the Fed. Well, the Fed is now wrested control over interest rates. The most important interest rate was, until recently, LIBOR. It's now SOFR. And right. It used to be unsecured, priced in London. It's now secured, priced in New York. Okay, now here comes Tether. Tether is a company that for all the allegations around it related to money laundering, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what's fascinating to me is that is that Congress is about to ensconce this by saying, okay, you can be an offshore issuer, and you don't have to do all the same know your customer and anti-money laundering rules that particularly that a bank has to do. Bank has to do what's something called CIP. Up front, you have to, before you onboard a customer to a bank, you have to do all the know your customer and enhanced customer information program up front. Fintechs don't have to do that. And Lord knows an offshore company does not.
And that offshore company will be Cantor Fitzgerald, Lutnick's company. They're the ones that are they hold all of the treasuries for this Tether stablecoin. This thing is outrageously popular all across the world. I didn't even realize how big this stablecoin is. It's being used by shop merchants, by regular people everywhere, because their own currency is so unstable, they prefer to use the Tether stablecoin, and they can easily pay with it. They're already doing it. It's just on your phone. It's back and forth. And here's a quick clip about how big stablecoin, particularly Tether, really is.
Tether is pushing the U.S. dollar out into emerging markets, down to the communities that nobody has banked before because nobody could figure out how to bank them. And those communities bank them profitably. And those communities, Tether did. Hats off to them for doing that. Those communities have access to the U.S. dollar for the first time. And in most of those emerging markets, they would much rather have a U.S. dollar than their own local currency. And Tether has built this distribution channel, and there is nobody competing with them. And they are pushing the U.S. dollar out into the distribution channel, and they're recycling those tiny amounts of money from working class in emerging markets. And I think they have 400 million users. It's a stunning number of users. They're right. The biggest financial company in the world right now, and just keep getting bigger. And they are recycling all of those flows back into the U.S. Treasury market. What is that doing? Because those are not going to be panic sellers. What is that doing? That is increasing the resilience of the U.S. Treasury market.
And that is exactly the point. And making the dollar strong as a currency and usable outside the U.S. with the euro dollar. And we can then control our own interest rate because LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate, which was the standard. If you've ever looked at your car statement or your mortgage, it'll say, you know, on an adjustable rate, it'll say, we offer you this money at LIBOR plus 1% or plus 2%. LIBOR, we remember there was a big scandal with LIBOR in 2008. LIBOR was already set to be replaced and killed off by something called SOFR, the Secured Overnight Financing Rate from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And so this is Bloomberg 7 years ago. This is how long this is in the making, talking about this new way to set interest rates, not by British banks and JP Morgan, they were part of that, who were just doing willy-nilly whatever they wanted, which kept us not in control of interest rates in America. They were already talking about this SOFR.
Ed, let's start first with the SOFR situation, which I have to confess, I'm not an expert on this, but it's sort of oopsie.
Nobody is.
Oopsie. Isn't that what you say? Oopsie. Yeah. So the Fed comes out with this new alternative to LIBOR, and this is going to be, they're trying to compete with some other alternatives over in Europe to say, this is the way you should peg your interest rates. And then they discover, oh, we included some transactions we weren't supposed to be including.
I call it SOFR. I thought that sounded better.
I've heard SOFR, so far, so bad.
So it's kind of a case of better the devil you know. Look, LIBOR, as we know, was not perfect. In fact, it was far from perfect. But this is, as you say, the alternative, and it's already gone wrong. 2 weeks in, and it's already gone wrong. So what's happened here is essentially the Fed have come out, and they've said some forward-settling overnight Treasury repo transactions were included where they shouldn't have been included. So all of the data for that two-week period is botched. Now, they said they're not going to republish it, but they are going to publish alongside it sort of data, theoretical data of what it would look like if you stripped out those transactions. So it is a bit of a mess. And I think the real challenge is this. A lot of people obviously still use LIBOR as the benchmark. That's going to end in 2021 because the FCA and the UK have said that the at that point it will disappear.
Yeah.
How do you get people to migrate across to something if it shows, even at this sort of very early stage, that it's unreliable? This thing needs to be absolutely rock solid if it's going to convince people to migrate across.
It needs the derivative products, which supposedly those products are coming.
So this thing has migrated. As of March 31st, 2025, the last LIBOR contracts, the last derivatives were finally all settled, taken care of. And now SOFR is the new interest rate setting standard for interest rates, which is completely in control now of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And this timing I find interesting because on April 2nd, he said he wanted to do on the 1st, but it came on the 2nd. President Trump talked about,
my fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day.
And maybe it was under the guise of the tariffs, but I think it was really about this interest rate that is now being set by us. We're in control of it, and we're leaving the stable coin as the ghetto dollar over there for the euro dollar, and they can do whatever they want. It's all backed by us. And this stable coin has a lot of properties that make it very interesting, not just overseas, but internally as well.
And by the way, Tether created the killer use case, which is for the US dollar. And a lot of people look at it and say, why do you need a blockchain for that? That's an inefficient database. Yes, of course, it's an inefficient database. But what were they able to do? Create incredible network effects by having 400 million users globally. That's bigger than the United States. Incredible network effects. That's what we're tapping into. What are the greenfields? The biggest one is putting that into the regulated banking industry. Everybody right now is forced into Fedwire, ACH, and a little bit of FedNow, but that was such a controlled, closed system that it hasn't really taken off. Fedwire and ACH, hell, stable coins are faster, cheaper, more auditable, more programmable, safer from an IT security perspective, I would argue, for a whole host of reasons. This is a game changer to push that into the green field of the traditional banking system.
So to wrap it up, I think the stable coin gambit is to keep the U.S. dollar as the strongest, most secure, backed by U.S. Treasuries dollar everywhere in the world. But we, through SOFR, will control our own interest rates. It's a big, big, long game gamble. And if Trump can pull it off, I don't know if it's going to be good or not, but it's definitely going to change the way finance works throughout the world. And that's all I know for now.
How does this benefit bankers?
I believe that bankers, part of the SBA Rule 12, that bankers can now issue their own version of stablecoin. And so they can do whatever they want. They like buying treasuries. So I'll buy a treasury, I can issue a stablecoin. And I can issue it domestically, I can issue it internationally. I think that's where they come into play.
How would this differ from the olden days when the banks used to actually print their own money?
Well, the difference is at that point they had to have gold to back their own money. And now you have to have treasuries, which is probably just as wonky. That's why I'm not sure it's a great idea. I'm not saying it's a great idea. I think it's what they're trying to do. It just, you know, it's complicated. I didn't even know what a euro dollar was until yesterday.
We got a call from the government.
Shut up, Curry. there you go. That's my stable coin presentation.
Okay. It wasn't as bad as I thought.
Oh, well, thank you. That coming from you is a huge endorsement.
I don't know about that.
There's the government. Do you need to talk to him?
I'm going to go pick that up. But why don't you play the clip about the impeachment, the partial impeachment announced?
Okay. Partial impeachment.
This is Congressman Sri Thanedar. Donald Trump has already done real damage to our democracy. But defying a unanimous 9-0 Supreme Court ruling, that has to be the final straw. It's time we impeach Donald J. Trump. The court said the wrongfully deported Kilmer Garcia must be allowed to return and receive due process. Trump ignored it. He ignored the Constitution. He ignored the very checks and balances that keep our democracy intact. This isn't an isolated incident. It's part of a dangerous, deliberate pattern. That's why today I introduced a resolution to impeach Donald J. Trump, outlining 7 articles of impeachment. Article 1, obstruction of justice and abuse of executive power, from denying due process to unlawful deportations, Trump defied court orders.
Is this a call you got earlier today? Is this a robocall?
The call I got was the arborist canceling.
Oh, no. And that's, I've been waiting months for this.
Well, you and me both.
Why would the arborist? So John has a branch. John has a branch which has been squeaking against his window for months. Sometimes I can hear it if it's windy on the show, but I almost always hear it after the show when I turn all the noise gates off. I'm like, oh man, that thing must be driving you nuts.
Well, it's only when you have a southerly breeze. So anyway, so that's the guy. He's a screwball-looking character. I don't even know what he's thinking. He's got a wig on, and he's like, seriously, you should check this out. And he went on and on. He's got about 8 points. And it's, of course, going to go nowhere, but it's making a big scene, and he sounds like a moron.
Yeah, I would say.
But that's
so.
Big news.
Yeah, articles of impeachment. Finally, someone did it.
Yeah, I was waiting for Al Green, but he didn't do it yet.
No.
Okay, TikTok.
Yay.
They're both short. They're both under a minute.
Okay.
The dating app girl.
So I'm scrolling the dating apps earlier, and for the first 20 swipes, it's conservative, moderate, apolitical, nothing, conservative, moderate. And to me, conservative, moderate, and apolitical, and nothing is all the same thing. You all are MAGA. So immediately, no. Took me 20 swipes to finally find a liberal. So I'm like, gee, what the fuck is going on? Why is everybody MAGA? It's not that everybody's MAGA. It's that, you know, the male loneliness epidemic. It's because nobody wants to date them. They don't make good partners. That's why there's so many single ones out there. All the liberals are taken, not all of them. Obviously, there's some out there. But, like, I rather have no dates than ever date a MAGA ever fucking again. So I will scroll until my fingers fall off until I can find the perfect liberal.
Why do they always have to cuss all the time?
This cussing is unbelievable.
It's getting annoying.
It's very annoying, and there's nothing you can do about it. No. They won't stop it.
No, they won't.
Here's another woman. This one here is complaining about her time blindness.
No, time blindness,
which is my favorite topic.
Please, I'm time blind. That's why I'm late. We went through this several times in the past couple of years.
Yep.
So I just got yelled at for asking a very reasonable question. So I'm applying to go somewhere, and I just wanted to know, are there accommodations for people who struggle with time blindness and being on time, you know? And then the person I was with interrupted and acted like I was asking something else. And then when we were done, they actually started yelling at me and saying that accommodations for time blindness doesn't exist. And if you struggle with being on time, you'll never be able to get a job, you know, provided you're trying your absolute best to be there. And then they're like, your stupid generation wants to destroy the workplace. And yeah, I think that a culture where workers are just cut off because they struggle with being on time, when there's other solutions that we can look to, I think that just anybody who thinks it's okay to just treat people like that, yeah, that culture needs to be dismantled. And then I asked that person, how can you feel good about yourself upholding this kind of system? And then to think, I'm entitled. No, if people think it's okay to treat others like this, that's entitlement.
Now, oh, brother.
I like the way she reversed it. We reversed roles there.
You're entitled because you're on time. Stop it. This is not healthy. I'm worried about you. You should not be watching too much of this.
No, this is good stuff. Everybody loves it.
It's all engagement farming. I don't believe any of these people is being honest. Not a single one. You think they're real? I think they're all phony. I think
most of them are real. There's a couple of phonies, but they're pretty obvious when you see them. But let's play this. This is a Since you played that thing about the stablecoin, let's play this clip. This is Temu versus France.
Oh, Temu!
The trade war between the US and China has also affected Europe, as several European countries report a surge in dumped Chinese products on their market. Last year, 1.5 billion parcels, mostly from China, entered France, averaging just around $10 each. Authorities are concerned with this trend, which poses a threat not only to local producers, but also to consumers. On Tuesday, four French ministers unveiled a plan to tackle the flood of low-cost parcels from China. To protect consumers, the government will triple inspections this year, checking product safety, labeling, and environmental claims. It also looking to the EU to end customs duty exemption for parcels under $170 to protect local businesses. Yann Rivoallon is president of the French Women's Prêt-à-Porter Federation.
Wait a minute. Is France putting something equal to tariffs in place against China? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's kind of what you're hearing, but the number I thought was interesting, that in France they're getting 1.5 billion packages
of cheap Chinese crap.
Cheap Chinese crap.
Nice.
He says the influx of Chinese products has led to around 10,000 job losses over the past 2 years and the closure of several fashion brands. He also says French fashion brands are unable to compete.
Toutes les semaines,
every week, brands send me copies of counterfeit products made in China. First, our designs are being stolen. Second, the employees of Shein or Temu are being exploited. They're paid a pittance and forced to work from 75 to over 100 hours a week, with barely one day off a month. This is clearly unacceptable. They also commit tax fraud by declaring underreported sales figures.
According to the government, over 90% of these products are unsafe for consumers. However, Rivoallon says the new measures fall far short and should be aligned with the stronger U.S. actions against such platforms.
C'est totalement ridicule versus ce que font les États-Unis.
It's totally ridiculous compared to what the United States is doing with $100 on each of these packages. So we're in a situation where we know that over 90% of products are dangerous for the French, dangerous for consumers, for our jobs, and for the planet. And yet we're putting in place a small measure with barely 10% tax potential.
It's really amazing, the junk, the cheap junk we have from China. This microphone I'm using right now, cheap junk from China. This Yeti cup, American Yeti, Texas company, made in China. This bell, China. This whistle, China. My Lightphone 3, China. This all from China. And I look, at the stuff and I go, do I really need all this stuff? You know, do I really need it? My guns are from, my guns are not from China. My guns are not from China.
Not yet.
Like yet. We probably need to just have this story out for a moment because it's not really a big topic. You know, there was a pretty bad attack on tourists there. You know, Pakistan and India heating up. And here's the latest from Pakistan.
We start with the dispute between India and Pakistan following a deadly attack in Indian-administered Kashmir, which left 26 people dead last week. The Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, has been holding high-level talks with his cabinet in response to the attack, which it blames on Pakistan, a claim repeatedly denied by Islamabad. Pakistan's information minister says his country has credible intelligence that India is planning to attack.
Pakistan open-heartedly offered a credible, transparent and independent investigation by a neutral commission of experts to ascertain the truth. Unfortunately, rather than pursuing the path of reason, India has apparently decided to tread the dangerous path of irrationality and confrontation, which will have catastrophic consequences for the complete region and beyond.
World leaders have expressed deep concern and urged restraint by the uneasy neighbors who have fought several wars and who both have nuclear weapons.
Man, Led Zeppelin did songs about Kashmir. Can these guys not just settle it finally? What is so special?
Seems unlikely.
What is so special about the Kashmir region? What is it? What do they care? Well,
everybody thinks it's a fabulous place, and both sides think it's theirs. They own it.
Well, what's so fabulous about it? Does it get?
I don't know. I've never been there.
Does it have a beach? No.
Supposed to just be fabulous. I don't know why they can't get it.
Well, we have Pakistanis and Indians in our
The explanation will be biased, and both we won't find out anything.
Well, I'll take bias over nothing, over this report. But it's going to they're going to strike us. Why? We don't know why.
You're right.
Yeah, we don't know why.
They've been bitching. This has been going on forever.
For decades.
I have a real news clip if we want to play real news, the jingle.
Goodness gracious. I don't even know.
I know. We haven't done this for a year.
Where is... Oh, wait. It's under... I have the real news clip somewhere.
And now, back to real news.
Okay, time for real news. What do you have?
So the sports ball people are talking, everyone's talking and ridiculing this guy, including Megan.
Kelly?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is Bill Belichick, who's he's 60, 70, he's like 72, I think, and he's got a 24-year-old girlfriend.
Go Bill.
What a lot of people say. And so he was interviewed by CBS Morning, and then they had to clip some of her in there because she was being annoying at the interview. She was butting in a lot, and then he came back with a comment about it, and then then CBS came back with a comment, and it went back and forth. But here's the Megyn Kelly, this Belichick. This is the Megyn Kelly report on it, and she's of course,
she's Megyn.
It's horrible.
She's Megyn. Yeah. Yes.
So this guy, Bill Belichick, has been in the news lately because his girlfriend, I think, is 50 years, a 47 to 50 years.
Oh, no.
Difference between Belichick and
now, is she mad about that? Is that the premise? She's mad about the age difference
chick? No, she doesn't express this, but she is.
Oh, okay.
Young gal pal. So she shows up at these black tie events with him wearing nothing. She's basically wearing like a bikini and he's wearing a normal man's clothing.
Shocking.
And it looks weird. You're like, okay, whatever. I guess I'm not, who am I to judge? But I'm judging. I won't lie. It's weird. And I'm pretty sure she is with him because he's very famous and probably has a lot of money and gets her access to cool things. That's my guess. I'm just...
What? Gambling?
I'm going to say it. But anyway, he gives this interview, and now it's starting to look much more like a Jill Biden situation. That's all I could think of, you guys. Like, she's like Dr.
You guys?
Jill on the sidelines calling all the shots and, like, trying to decide what he can answer and what he can't in this interview. And what we learned today, I'll show you the clip, but what we learned today was that it was far worse than CBS This Morning, which is like a nice program. They try to do like nice stories, would even air. The reason reportedly that they chose to air this one interruption of hers is because it was far worse than this. She was trying to dominate behind the scenes, and they felt it was okay to include one of her interruptions just to give the audience, to be transparent, that they had this monster on screen left who was completely trying to control him. And it was to the point where they didn't feel like it would have journalistic integrity if they didn't show at least some of it. Watch this.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on.
What? And it went on. Like the portion I talked to you about, like, it went on and on to where it was very cringy. You were like, oh, God.
Oh, Megan, how deep you have sunk.
Megan.
Why is she doing this? She's the woman who was like the big political journalist, lawyer, and all she can do is show business stuff. I'm sure it's great. Well, we know the answer. It's great for downloads. It's great numbers. For views. It's numbers. This is why value for value is a much better way to do it. You don't need numbers to survive.
You don't need to deal with these people who send us AI
analysis
of the show being anti-advertiser.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh yeah, that'd be fab.
Yeah, on No Agenda.
And to prove that, we are going to thank our donors $50 and above.
Yeah, we did pretty well today, so that was nice.
That was nice, very nice.
Hopefully, we got the big show coming up on Sunday, the Cinco de Mayo special.
Woo, everybody! Yeah, that's right, it is.
Marjorie the big Cinco Santelli de Mayo. Starts us off. She's in Kirtland, Ohio, 12345. Ashen, Texas, in Flower Mound, 12121. And that's an El DeBarge donation.
Thank you. One person got my joke. Thank you. It's appreciated.
I guess, yeah.
It's appreciated.
Okay, well, she's on the ball.
Yeah, nice.
Connie Wolz-Lusink and Heinen-Noord, North Heinen, Netherlands, 12120. And she got a long note there. She's a big fan of yours.
Yes, I can see.
And you can. She's just a note for you. You can read it to yourself.
She says eggs are expensive over there. She says our eggs are 36 euro cents per egg. Therefore, I give you 2 dozen eggs donation. That's a 12-12. 121. 121.2. I like it. The eggs donation. Thank
eggs
you.
Eggs donation. Why not?
Yeah. 2 dozen eggs.
So Jay has eggs.
Uh huh.
And so she brought me some because I use a raw egg in my morning. No agenda drink.
Yes, we have discussed this. It was a tip of the day. .net.
And she's got a chicken there, and I would just almost a tip of the day. It's a Buff Orpington, which is a killer, beautiful chicken. We used to have them up north. A Buff, and it used to be called Buffy. It's a beautiful red chicken and huge. And it produces the chicken. I've never seen home chickens usually don't do this. Produces jumbo eggs.
Jumbo! How big are they?
They're huge. It's a big, giant egg. She says that the chicken makes a squawk every time she lays one.
I'll bet. Yeah, no doubt. Poor chicken.
Onward, sir, by his grace in Jacksonville. Get Buff Orpingtons. Sir, by his grace in Jacksonville, Florida, 11122. And he's also mentioned Southeastern Turf Grass Supply.
For all his, for all your grass agronomic needs.
Yeah. Sir Casey.
By the way, I know Sir by his grace, and he's so worried about the tariffs. He keeps sending me articles like, he's going to screw it up. He's going to screw it up. He's going to screw up. I have to close my business. He's going to screw up. Trump's no good.
Wait, is he getting his turf from China?
No, I think his pesticides, herbicides, all that stuff. Yeah, he definitely gets stuff from China.
Sir KC9YJM73 is 105.35. Yeah, he wants a jobs karma at the end, if you don't mind. Paul Summers in Bath, Pennsylvania, 100. Jennifer Rain in Snoqualmie, Washington, 100. Sir F.A.N. Beck in Shiftwood Forest, somewhere in the United States, 100. Melibation. Okay. In Colorado Springs, 100. Kevin McLaughlin's up. Hey, the Conker, North Carolina, is the Archduke of Luna, lover of American boobs. 8008, the boob donation. Rick LaBanca in Hope, Rhode Island, 7373. That's a ham radio donation. And heaven forbid, we got another one. Noble Anderson in Montgomery, Alabama, 7373, with a happy birthday to me. This is a while ago. I guess it's my 73rd birthday and a donation. Yeah, but it's also 73s.
Better because late than never.
Brandon Locklear in Sugar Hill, Georgia, 7373s with his call sign K4QOL.
That's a ham donation, 73s.
Sir Chris Abraham in Arlington, Virginia, 7373. And Sir Stickwater, 7340.
Slickwater. You need a different font, Sir Slickwater.
Yeah, I should. There's got to be a default font.
Oh, please. You've threatened to do this for years.
I don't do any. Let's face it, I'm a big talker, no action. Dame Dana Carroll in Laughlin, Nevada, 7227. Jorge Alvarez in Ponte Verde Beach, Vedra Beach, in 7171. Commodore 64 in Tucker, Georgia, which is 64, but he has the extra fee, 6510. Craig Kohler in Evansville, Indiana. He's got 6502, my favorite donation for people who know what a chip is. Jacob Alley in Wichita, Kansas, 6331.
Jacob says he's been on a subscription plan but never got a formal dedouching, so we'll do that now.
You've been dedouched.
There you go.
Jamie Buell in Vista, California, 6006 small boobs. And Baronettes Salty in Manchester, New Hampshire, 5856, which is 5555 plus the fee. By the way, when you send a check in, the fee is 15 cents.
That's right.
Brian P. Bellin in Asbury, New Jersey, 5856. Sad puppy donation. That's what that is.
Okay.
And what do we have here? Whoops, I just overscrolled. Marnix Cart in Den Haag, Netherlands. 5555. Eric Flenor in Palmyra, Michigan, 5555. Anonymous, 55. Surprise Night of Astonishment in Yukon, Oklahoma, 5444. Tom Ross in Sylmar, California, 5328. And he's got something. He likes the newsletter, likes Tip of the Day, likes the jokes, but he says less bickering. It's only 65% funny.
Oh, that's a passing grade on the bickering. And he sent you a copy of Dvorak's Guide to PC Telecommunications, and he wants you to sign it and return it.
Yes, I already communicated with him. I will do that.
It's an instant bestseller.
Instant. Anonymous Oklahoma City, 5272. Timothy White in Elburn, Illinois, 5150. Eric Schmidt in Frankfurt, Deutschland, 5150. Dame Courtney, Chicago. She's in Chicago, 5125. ITM Mayday. It's a donation she can afford.
Yeah, that's you put that in the newsletter. That was the 55-1, and she put 25. That was the Mayday. Don't you remember? You set this up?
Yeah, 51-25. That's the Mayday donation. In fact, we have a bunch of Mayday donations. I'm going to read them one after the other, just name and location, starting with Michael Chauvin, who has no location. Michael Ragus in Tustin. Dame Lacey, and she's in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Fair Volt T. Faravolt Tea in London, England.
Yeah.
Send us some tea. Is it a tea company? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tea company. Send us some tea.
I go for some tea.
Yeah.
Scott Riley in Meridian, Idaho. John Aiken in Babson Park, Florida. And last on their list is Dame Rita in Sparks. She's a regular. Great newsletter and shows, she writes.
Yeah.
Joseph Wenzel in Dawson, Georgia, $51. He lives in small.
He says, I love what you cats talk about. Keep chumming it up.
He works at a big box store.
Yeah.
And now we got the $50 donors. I'll just go run through them, name and location, starting with William Hammer in Hagerstown, Maryland. Leif Thompson in Meridian, Idaho. Bobby Bo. In Bluegrass, Iowa, Comfort King in Valley Springs, South Dakota, Joshua Johnson in Omaha, Nebraska, Scott McCarty in Lodi, Jordan Tierney in Oral, South Dakota, got the South Dakotans in today,
yeah.
Tony Lang in Castle Pines, Colorado, C. Jones in Safety Harbor, Florida, and last on our list is Leslie Walker. She's in Roseburg, Oregon, and she loves us. Okay, that'll be it for today's show, 1760.
Yes, she says she loves us. May the Lord bless us. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. All of our donors, $50 and above. We will not read anything under for reasons of anonymity. So we see you, $49.99. So we appreciate it. And of course, all of those sustaining donors, if you go to noagendadonations.com, you can make a donation of any amount. We love the numerology, as you can tell. Lots of different numbers. And thank you for the explanation. But the sustaining donations really do help, any amount, any frequency. And we actually have a Baron coming up who did just that. Thank you as always. And once again, noagendadonations.com. Very short list, along with Willie Nelson, of course, who celebrated yesterday, and Wirt Fuller, April 29th. Jessica says happy birthday to John Dale. He turns 50 on May 2nd. And finally on the list, happy birthday to Rick LaBanca. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. And now we have 10 people who took advantage of the final moment of the Commodore ship. This means that when you go to noagendarings.com and you give us the actual name you would like on your certificate of being a Commodore, we will take care of that for you. We have Commodore Anonymous Black Sheep, Commodore Scott Horton, Commodore of the Human Resource Producers, Commodore Mark of Crow Wing County, Commodore Sir Milkman of Ebbington, Commodore Zach Zedok Brown III, Commodore SDG, Commodore Brock Reinhold, and Commodore John Tucker. Commodores arriving. Woo, good list. Very good list. Here's that layaway Baron who will be knighted today, Sir Tom. He is let me read his note. I was originally hit in the mouth by Fabian of the Linux Outlaws, and after 11 years, I finally achieved the title of Baron through monthly donations of 33 and a care package of bratwurst and other meats back in 2021. I don't remember I think John hoarded all the bratwurst and meats. Yes, everyone can do it.
That's the stuff from Nemechek.
I don't know. I don't remember. But he goes on to say, yes, everyone can do it. You too. You can do it too. The Peerage Committee has approved carving out the area code of 920 with Sir 10T, Duke of Federal Reserve District 7's protectorate. As such, I request a title change to Baron Tom, Warden of the Frozen Tundra. Go, Pack, go. Keep up the great work, gents. 11 more years. Tom G from the Bratwurst Capital. And we're going to knight him right now. So get your blade out. We definitely need to have a nice blade for him because he's
here's a good one.
Ooh, that is a good one. So, all right then. Tom G, step on up. Very proud to pronounce the KD not only as a knight of the No Agenda Roundtable, but as Sir Tom, Baron Tom, Warden of the Frozen Tundra. For you, my friend, we have hookers and blow, rent boys and Chardonnay, prostitutes and some nice wine. We have Harless and Haldol, pepperoni rolls and pale ales, redheads and rye, beers and blunts, cowgirls and coffin varnish, Reuben S. women and rosé, geishas and sake, vodka, vanilla, bong hits and bourbon, sparkling cider and escorts, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum, and of course, as always at the round table, mutton and mead. And congratulations. Tom, head over to noagendarings.com. Let us know where you want us to send your ring. There's a ring sizing guide on the website, so make sure you have the right size. It comes with two sticks of wax. With that, you can seal your important correspondence, and as always, with a certificate of authenticity. And thank you for becoming not just a knight, but a layaway knight and baron of the No Agenda Roundtable.
No Agenda!
Well, the meetups are still huge, as you can imagine. They take place all over Gitmo Nation, around the globe, really. People love doing them. They're producer organized. You can go to noagendameetups.com, find some near you. There's a calendar, there's a list. And we love it when you send in meetup reports, but it's getting a little bit out of control. So keep it short, please. There's only one today, so I don't mind playing it. This is the meetup report from Chicago.
What's up, y'all? This is Eli the Coffee Guy, hanging out here. Reggie's having a blast with everybody. Peace out to Baron NBS, getting out of Chi-Town. I don't blame you, brother, but it's still a great city. Look!
Yo, it's Andrew here from the UK. MI6 has come out here to represent. And it's a real fucking pleasure to be out here. And MBS is looking kind of shocked to get past the mic after that.
Not a serial killer, Kate here.
No, this is Sir.
Darth Penguin of Loch Tucky, enjoying the In the Morning crew here, staring lovingly into Eli the Coffee Guy's eyes because he's a handsome devil. But all glory to Nick MDS for escaping Chicago and going to more beautiful pastures than an asshole totalitarian. All right, God bless.
In the morning.
Hey, this is Sir Tinley Knot. Woke. We are here at Reggie's in Chicago, the only venue that has been good to us. They have been good to us since the pandemic when we had our first meetup here. And passing it on in the morning.
In the morning, John and Adam. This is Baron NBS at the Escape from Chicago meetup. I'm wrapping my time up here in Chicago, and it's been a wonderful time here in Chicago. Hanging out here with Eli, Alex, and some random, very fine people in the morning.
Hey, this is Blake. John, we're in trouble. There's a lot of cheap guitars in Chicago.
Hey, all economic indicators aside, this is Sir Brian with a Y. We are fixing an impost. We are fixing an impost. Oh my God, Adam, I am so sorry. But we're living up in Chicago again. If you live nearby, come to the next meetup. We have a bunch of them in the morning.
What's up, No Agenda Nation? This is KJ6QDT. Just happy to be here for my first meetup, hanging out with MBS. Wish them best of luck. And yeah, we'll see you all on No Authority.
Hi, this is Alex, ITM. This is Dame Courtney, sit here saying farewell to NBS. We will truly miss you in Chicago.
In the morning.
Alcohol, I'm telling you. That, keep it tight, people. And where's the server? I missed that. I'm going to have to scold you a little bit. Meetups happening today. The Northern Wake Public Slave Gathering, 6 o'clock at Potluck, Hoppy Endings in Raleigh, North Carolina. The South Austin Slaves Meetup tonight at 7 in Little Woodrow's in South Park Meadows in Austin. Hope you RSVP'd because you had to. Tomorrow, the Tri-Cities Washington 6-week cycle meetup, 7 o'clock at Ty's Bar and Grill in West Richland, Washington. On Saturday, the first No Agenda Splash Up. That's the spring edition. That'll be 1 o'clock Dutch North Sea time, and that'll be in Scheveningen, the Netherlands. Scheveningen. You have to RSVP to find out where it is. Arno's organized that. The Sonoma Wino Country meetup on Saturday as well. Version 7.0 at Old Cas Beer in Rohnert Park, California. And on Sunday, our next show day, Hot Meat and Freedom Flames Brussels Backyard Barbecue. Woo! That's at 4 o'clock in Brussels in Ixelles, Ixelles. Make sure you go to that one. And I want meetup reports from everybody 1 minute or less. If you want to find all the meetups available, they are all around the world. You can find them at noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you won't be, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
It's like a party. It's just like a party. That was the time we select our end of show ISO, a rare occasion today where we both have one. It's a one-on-one matchup. I don't think I'm going to win.
Well, then play yours.
Wait, you have 11 seconds. How can yours be 11 seconds?
I don't think it is.
It says 11 seconds.
This is it's probably something wrong with the clip. I'm having issues.
Yeah, it appears to be. I'm going to play yours now, and then I'll see where we can find
it. I think you might have two of them back to back or
another
something.
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
What is it?
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
Another fabulous show.
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
So that's you trying 5 different versions of AI.
It's the first.
It's the second
and of
one.
Course, I shouldn't have recorded the whole thing, but the second one is the one I wanted.
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, you've given away your ISO secrets here. You.
I know. It was a huge blunder.
Yes, it was. Here's mine.
Yo, yo, yo. What up?
No, you already did that one.
No, it's a brand new one.
It still stinks.
There we go, everybody. It's time for the tip of the day. At least John can't mess that one up. Here we go.
Green advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB.
And sometimes Adam. Created by Dana Bernetti.
All right, we're back to wine and food. One more tip. This is a website that I use a lot, and it's a cheap trick. You're buying wine.
Yes, we're buying wine.
You want to know if the wine's any good. What are you going to do?
What are we going to do? You're going to, well,
you go to wine searcher.
Can I just say something? I am getting complaints. Sir Gene recently was at a dinner, texted a picture of the wine list to you. He says, John no longer responds.
I missed it.
Because the the phone was in the drawer.
It should be sent to my email if I'm there, but I could be watching. I might be downstairs getting clips, or I could be doing a lot of things. I'm sorry, Gene.
Okay.
But generally speaking, I take care of this.
Okay.
Wine-searcher.com.
Ooh.
This is a huge, monstrous database of wines and all the reviews and all the stores that sell the wine.
Wow.
So you get a look at the wine. You put a wine at the top, you know, say Chateau Montrose, 1990.
Yeah.
And then it gives you where it's available, all the different prices from cheapest to most expensive. And then you click on reviews. It shows you all the known reviews, and it gives you summaries of the reviews, and it gives you star ratings, and it even goes to Seller Tracker, which is a site that a lot of people think is great.
I have Seller Tracker, the app.
Yes, yeah, Seller Tracker, the app, which is a way of, which is amateurs rating the wines.
That's correct. It's amateurs rating the wine, taking pictures of the label. The label goes, oh, it should cost you this much.
Yeah, but it's got the Seller Tracker number in there too. Mm-hmm. It's dynamite. This is a godsend for anyone who buys wine.
And do you recommend this 1990 bottle you just mentioned? Is that like $8,000? What is that?
The 1990 Montrose?
Yes. What does that cost me?
Oh, it's not cheap.
But it's the one that's the top of your mind. It makes me wonder.
It just came up the top of my mind.
Yeah. Because, you know, John's
I had it once in my life. It's
I'm
killer.
Thinking about Andres in a box, and John's like, whoa, the Montrose 1990. Yeah, that's what I'll have. There you go, everybody. You can find John's Tip of the Days at tipoftheday.net or noagendafun.com.
Green advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCD.
And sometimes Adam. Created by Dana Bernetti.
There you go, everybody. Once again, we have completed our broadcast day, and we are happy to have served you. We do this as a public service. You are welcome to support us with some value if you got any value out of this program, since clearly advertisers hate us, and with good reason. We are bad for their image. So make sure you walk on by noagendadonations.com, which soon will be available as a button in your modern podcast app. I guarantee it. End of show mixes, a nice trip house little ditty from Nautilus K. I think he may be new. I don't think he's ever done a mix before. And David Kechter checks in, our drummer. Our drummer who's always doing mixes. He's got a hot new girlfriend, I hear. So he's been a little sparse on the mixes. And I guess I can conclude by telling you that I am still here in the picturesque little town of Fredericksburg in the Texas Hill Country. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain without an arborist, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Sunday with another minimum 3 hours of media deconstruction for your pleasure, again as a public service. And please remember us at noagendadonations.com. Until then, adios, mofos, and a hooey hooey, and such. By the way, Two Good Old Boys is next.
RFT Junior,
red dye.
RFT Junior,
red dye.
Bob is young. RFT Junior. RFT Junior.
Bob is young.
RFT Junior,
red dye.
RFT Junior,
red dye. Bob is young.
RFT Junior,
red dye.
RFT Junior, red dye. Control the base.
Bob is young.
Crude oil.
RFT Junior,
red dye. Control the base.
Bob is young.
Crude oil. RFT Junior,
red dye.
Control the base.
Bob is young.
Crude oil.
Mouth to feed.
Money.
Order sushi. RFT. Mouse to feed. RFT. Mouse to feed. Order sushi. RFT. Mouse to feed. RFT. Mouse to feed. Order sushi. Guards. Mouse to feed. Order sushi. Guards. RFT Junior. RFT Junior.
Bob is yum.
RFT Junior.
Red dye.
RFT Junior.
Red dye. Bob is yum.
Mouse.
Red dye. Try watermelon juice.
Mouse.
Red dye. Try watermelon juice.
Guards. Mouse.
Red dye. Try watermelon juice.
Mouse.
Red dye. Try watermelon juice.
Guards.
Red dye. Try watermelon juice.
Do not forget to pray for me.
No gays. That's what he used to say.
Around the globe, they call him the People's Pope. And this is a man who really just embraced caring about the poor, the least among us.
No gays. The People's Pope.
They call him the People's Pope.
Dvorak.org/NA
Another fabulous show. What more can I say?